On the next kino, Echa Atzta Ve'Apecha, so it begins, obviously, each stanza, as you'll see, begins with the word Echa, which is interesting because basically one is challenging, so to speak, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and asking, how could you do such a thing? And you'll read through the kino, each stanza talks about something else that happened, and again, the question, Echa, how HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, could do so. What do you mean, how can HaKadosh Baruch Hu do so? Do we have the right to, so to speak, challenge our Kodesh Baruch Hu and ask, how could you do that? That's, as a general rule, something we're not permitted to do, to question Kodesh Baruch Hu and object. In fact, usually when something terrible happens, so we simply recite the bracha of Baruch Dayanu Emes, we don't understand it, we have the no right really to expect that we will understand it. So it's interesting that this kinnah begins Eicha, and many of the kinnahs, especially the earlier ones, seem to almost complain to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how could you have done such a thing? However, again, the Soloveitchik and others have pointed out that we draw our inspiration here from Yirmiyahu himself. Yirmiyahu HaNavi was the Navi who wrote the Megillas Eicha, and it begins with that question. So Yirmiyahu here apparently tells us this is an exception to the rule, and we're simply following Yirmiyahu's direction. HaKadosh Baruch Hu apparently gave us permission to ask and to challenge him, at least in this particular instance, on Tisha B'Av. That's where the book of Eicha is, and therefore the Paitan of Ozar Kalir followed along those lines and asked Eicha as well, this kinna and several other kinnas, where we basically complained to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. However, I would just add that the idea is, and we'll see this in later kinnas, that we ask the question and we object to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and so on, but ultimately we have to figure out the answer ourselves. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to answer, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to tell us, well, here's what happened, but rather we have to work on figuring out the answer ourselves and figuring out how to undo that which happened in Tisha B'Av. A little bit later in the kinnah, there's a reference to Chitun Chukei Chorev, and the Ches stands, it's alphabetical, as most of the kinnahs are. Okay, Chitun Chukei Chorev, this is a reference to Matan Torah, which is compared to Chitun Chasana, right? Matan Torah is compared to a wedding. Actually, there are two parts to a wedding. There's Erisin and there's Nisuin. The Erisin and Nisuin together, we happen to do in our practice is we do both the Erisin and Nisuin the same night, or the same afternoon. One time was separated by a number of months and so on. But in any event, the Har Sinai experience is compared to a wedding between Kal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And in fact, the engagement period also, the Erisin, the word Morashah that I mentioned yesterday, that there are two things which are called Morashah in the Torah. One is Torah Tzivana Moshe Morashah Kilas Yaakov. The Torah is called the Morashah, and so is Eretz Yisrael, and Asatiya Salachem Morashah Ni Hashem. And the Gemara says in one place, don't read it as Morashah, but rather as Me'orasah, from the word Erisin. So the relation with Kadosh Baruch Hu is a relationship of a husband and wife, of a young man, a young woman. And this is something which we also cry about, the fact that this relationship was apparently broken. Later on in the kinna mentions Velo Zacharta Oz Adi Adayim, the jewels, the decorative garments, referring most likely to the crowns which we received when we said Nasa Manishma. Again, what happened at Har Sinai, this is undone by, unfortunately, what took place at the time of Tisha B'Av. Now, this kinna also explains the at the very end, Zochri Biyosi B'Shalva Yosheves B'Yerushalayim. Again, that idea that we recall living in tranquility. It doesn't speak about miracles, doesn't speak, right? What we're interested in, Zochri, I remember, and we long for, is Biyosi B'Shalva Yosheves B'Yerushalayim. Living in Yerushalayim, living in comfort and peace without tzaras, without difficulties. Again, the notion of a just society, perhaps hinted at the end of this kinnah as well. Echa atzta ve'apecha. The next kinnah, kinnah ches, number 8, Adeh Archug Shamayim. Unusual word that begins with the word Adeh, translated usually as wood that are able to soar up to the heavens. And again, the idea that we complain to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we want to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu why he did this and so on. But the theme of this kina is, as our Salvation explained, that the destruction of Golos and Korban was not only something that affected the Jewish people historically, but also something that affected all of nature. All of nature. Somehow the absence of the Beis HaMikdash impacted all of nature, and therefore it speaks about, for example, in the Hay stanza, it speaks about the sun and the moon, so to speak, lamenting as well and screaming as well. So what's the idea of this? I think perhaps, getting back to something I've spoken about in the past, you know, when a person is depressed, when a person is upset about something, so nothing is good, right? We're always complaining about something. The weather's no good. It's too hot. It's too cold. It's too this. It's too that. When you're in a bad mood because something's happened, so nothing around you, even nature is no good. Even people who complain about the fact that somehow, you know, the weather's no good, or everything is bad. And again, that's something to be sensitive to. When a person's positive, a person's upbeat, so it's everything is wonderful. Every day is beautiful. Everything around me is beautiful. When it's bad, everything around seems menacing. The people who suffer from depression will tell you that sometimes you see that even the branches and the trees, you know, seem to be menacing, almost like the person sees the branches of the trees reaching out to harm him and so on. It's a condition. It's a way of thinking, unfortunately. And the perhaps the intent of this kina, Ader Chuk Shamayim, if as our Salvechik explained, that it speaks about the nature and the cosmos, you know, becoming cynical and indifferent and so on, mourning because of the Churban and so on. Well, maybe there's the idea also, again, when a person suffers, when a person is undergoing tzaras, so everything around him is no good. I think that, again, in line with what we're trying to present as one of the themes, this Tisha B'Av, that there are people who have these difficulties, and somehow we're obligated to try and make the person feel positive. And it's interesting because the kina here does not end on any positive note. Okay, it ends with the same question. Actually, pasuk in Megillas Eicha, Eicha Sifarti Rasha Sai Shliach. But nonetheless, the idea is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, somehow we have to convince people, to convince ourselves that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there, that there's a reason behind what was going on. It can be depressing. I mentioned last night that some Sfaradish shuls have a practice. At least based on what I've seen or heard, never there, but based on what I've read, that they announce each year how many years it's been since the Churban. And there is this line in this stanza, Bechol Shana Omeres Hi Hashana Hazos. Every single year we say, oh no, this is the year, right? L'shana Abav Yerushalayim. Right, this is it. You know, we each time we think this is the end, right? We made it, okay? We end the Davening Yom Kippur, we end the Seder on Pesach by saying L'shana Abba B'Yerushalayim, and we're confident this is, but it's frustrating because it hasn't happened. Like I've mentioned many years in the past, something I remember from my own childhood, you know, at a Pesach Seder, when we were singing Adir Hu, so, you know, towards the end of Nirtza, so I remember my father saying, how many generations of Jews have sat and sung this particular poem at the end of the Seder, Adir Hu Yivne Beiso Bikarov, Bimheira, Bimheira, Biyameinu Bikarov, right? How many generations of Jews sang, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mighty, and Baruch and all the letters of the Aleph Beis describing the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and have sung that song to one tune or another, but Bimheira, Bimheira, Biyameinu Bikarov, and it didn't happen. And this kind of expresses that frustration, and that's part of the depression, that after a while you wonder, so what's going on already? And nonetheless, we're supposed to maintain a positive a positive outlook, not necessarily so easy, especially when, again, the world around us seems to be so menacing. Adar Chushamay. Next kina kinetes begins, Eicha Sifarti Marashosai Hishlichu. We believe that our tiferes, our glory, our splendor has been cast down. And again, a reference directly to the Beis HaMikdash being destroyed. But again, the question of Eicha, how is it possible, how can it be, and so on. But here we find the response, Miyedchem ha'isazos lochem. Miyedchem ha'isazos lochem, based on a pasuk kenobi, Miyedchem ha'isazos lochem. That it was from our own hands, it was our own deeds. And so here, there is an answer to the question of Eicho. When we speak of Eicho, we ask how this could happen, so we're supposed to recognize, at least begin to recognize, and it's elaborated upon later, but Miyedchem, it was in our, in our own, based on our own deeds, that this these terrible events happen. Now, I spoke before about the relationship between Har Sinai and a wedding. Here, it says Kitor Chuposa Ola Huala Kakivshon. Okay, Kitor Kakivshon. That's a reference to Sodom, where the Torah says by the destruction of Sodom that Ola, smoke of Sodom, Ola Kitor Hakivshon. All right, and the idea is, as we said in the Haftarah yesterday of Shabbos Chazon, unfortunately we're compared by the Navi, Kisdom Hayinu Amara Diminu. We're compared to Sodom and Amora. Sodom and Amora, the archetypical wicked cities. And the Shaya Navi in Haftarah of Shabbos Chazon compares us, the Jewish people, to Sine Sodom, Am Amora. And it's about as big an insult, so to speak, as you can possibly level at somebody, from our perspective. And here, therefore, it says, this is perhaps a hinted reference, Kitor Chuposa, perhaps referring to the Beis HaMikdash, perhaps referring to Har Sinai, but the point is, the smoke went up, Kakivshan, it disappeared, like the smoke, in the air, like the smoke of an oven. And I think it's significant because, again, part of what we understand to be the chait of the people of Sodom and Amorah was a failure to set up a society that was a just society. They persecuted the downtrodden. Visitors came in. We're all familiar with the different midrashim about what happened to a visitor who came to Sodom. We see a little bit in the Chumash itself when Lot tries to help out these malachim who are coming in the guise of people. And they are mistreated, or there's certainly an attempt to mistreat them. So we know about the people of Sodom. And so when the Navi refers to us as following in the footsteps, unfortunately, of Sodom and Amorah, it's, again, perhaps in a sense not of simply violating the Torah in the broader sense, which is also there, as this particular kinah makes reference to Psukim and Parshas B'chukosai, which begin with the reward for following the Torah, and then the curses, the tochacha, the punishments for not following the Torah. But and both sections from both appear in this kinah. But leaving that aside, the point is that we have followed the practice of Sodom and Amorah, perhaps, in not caring for the needs of others or being somewhat cold to the needs of others. And I don't mean that necessarily anybody is actively nasty and so on. What's in our minds? What do we feel about people who somehow are different, who don't belong? Even on a simple level, do we welcome people in shul? Do we say hello to somebody? Do we care about people who may not have, the benefits and then the positives that we have? The people of Sodom and Amorah were known, that's what the Chazal tell us, they were known for mistreating, actively mistreating. Maybe we don't actively mistreat others, but rather perhaps in an attitudinal way we do. And that's part of what we mourn as well. And when we think about on Tisha B'Av, the kinah comes to a conclusion, but again, referring to the Jewish people as Chavetzelis HaSharon, the rose of the Sharon. Okay, but Eicho Yoshua Chavetzelis HaSharon. We ask, so to speak, how could this have taken place? But we've already at least begun to understand that, as it says at the beginning of the kinah, Miyedchem Hoysozos Lachem, it's because of our deeds, because of our behavior. And that's the beginning, or one of the beginning of the answers, to the answer to the question of Eicho. Continue with the next kin, again, kin test. Eicho sifarti marsha soy shlicho neged kisakho. The next kin yod, Eicho Yoshua Chavetzelis HaSharon. Chavetzelis HaSharon is a reference to Kal Yisrael, but this kin is a little bit different than anything we've said till now, because it's not talking about the general korban of the Beis HaMikdash, but specifically about the destruction of the kahuna. The kohanim were, of course, the those who worked in the Beis HaMikdash. They were the Shomrei, Mishmeres HaMikdash, and so on, as the Pesukim say in the Chumash, and perhaps more so than others, felt the loss of the Beis HaMikdash very, very acutely. The truth of the matter is, to this day, the most of the benefits, shall we say, or most of the dinim that relate to the Kiddush of a Kohen are not in effect. We still give a Kohen a first Aliyah, we have Birchas Kohenim, and so on, but the Kiddush of the Kohen, the prominence of the Kohen, was lost, for the most part, with the Churban Beis HaMikdash, and therefore the Kohanim, so to speak, get a special kina here. Some suggest that different stanzas here reference the different families from the Kohuna, because the Kohuna, the Kohanim were divided into 24 family groups, known as Mishmoros, who served in the Beis HaMikdash on a rotational basis. They would come for 1 week, that's how the Gemara says in Tainus, they would come for 1 week, then the following week the next group, the next family would come, the following the next come, and so they would come on a rotational basis, except the Yom Tovim, the Shal Shugom, and they were all there together. They also lived in different places. They had cities where the Kohanim lived. Apparently, once the Mishmaros were set up, they were set up again by family groups within the family of Kohanim, and apparently each one of the 24 groups lived in one of these different cities. It doesn't mean necessarily that other people besides Kohanim didn't live in these cities, but they were primarily cities of Kohanim. And this kina refers to names of all these different groups based on their family. And therefore, on a simple level, we're told about this group that perhaps suffered even more with the loss of the Beis HaMikdash. But in the more general sense, the Kohanim were the leaders. And on one hand, they were very, very dedicated to the Beis HaMikdash. In fact, as we pointed out in the past, of Soloveitchik used to note that Shivasa B'Tammuz marks the breaching of the walls of the old city of Yerushalayim. That was 3 full weeks before Tisha B'Av, right, the period of the 3 weeks. It took 3 weeks for them to get from the walls, breaking through the walls, this mighty Roman army breaking through the walls, the old city of Yerushalayim, to get to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Most of us, if not all of us, have been there. And you can walk it in about 10 minutes. You know, what in the world took, maybe 15 minutes, what in the world took 3 weeks, you know, for these mighty armies to advance from the breaching of the walls, from breaking through the walls, to eventually destroying the Beis HaMikdash. So what our Soloveitchik suggests is that, yeah, it was the defense of, you know, it wasn't just walking like we do. We walk, take a leisurely walk, you know, from the Shar Yafa or whatever. We walk to the coastal, it takes 10, 15 minutes or whatever, but they were fighting, and even though it was the mighty Roman army, the Kohanim put up, the Kohanim who defended the Beis HaMikdash, Shomrei Mishmeres HaMikdash, and so on, put up a valiant fight. And for that reason as well, the Kohanim get a kind of an honorary mention, a special kina, because of their defense of the Beis HaMikdash. At the same time, unfortunately, the Kohanim, in their role as teachers, unfortunately, in many cases, did not transmit what they had to transmit to the people, and therefore, in a certain sense, are perhaps guilty. Just like they, you know, missed the Beis HaMikdash, perhaps more because it was their kedusha disappeared, and therefore we sort of honor the Kohanim with this pia directly, relevant directly to them. Nonetheless, there was also some fault on the part of Kohanim for failing to teach the people properly. Now, in the stanza that begins, Golos Me'oretz, there's a reference, Ba'avon Maisus U'Shmita. What Averis brought about the Chorban? What was the clincher? What was it? There are many Averis. We had the 3 Averis in the Bayis Rishon, Sin and Schinim. We spoke about it. But here, towards the beginning of the Piyut, it says, Ba'avon Maisus U'Shmita. Okay, the Chorban is a result of failing to keep the mitzvahs of Tullis Ba'aretz, including giving Maiser, and including Shmita. That's based on Pesukim in the Chumash. That says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us that if we don't observe the laws of Shemitah and let the land lie fallow every 7 years, he's going to drive us out of the land, then it'll lie fallow for as long as you have the land. Right? Because no one else is going to make a go of it in Eretz Yisrael. And that's what he says here. Okay? Bavon Maisus Shemitah, the land is going to lie empty, and no other nation will be successful in planting, which I guess is a good thing in a certain sense. But then the Shemitah will be, you know, sort of, Oz Titzah Aretz is Shav Sosel. But I would add that again, Shemitah also is an equalizer. In Shemitah, there's no landowners, there's no hierarchy, there's no aristocracy. Everybody has the right to eat from the produce of the land. It's declared hefker and so on, the dinim of Shemitah. Again, to take care of those who are in need. It's not just a matter of being good for the land, which it is, good for the soil, but it's also to take care of the people who need taken care of. And when that didn't happen, when they did not observe the Shemitah, so then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, promised in the Torah, we're driven out of the land, and that's what the Kinner refers to here, Ba'avon Maisus Shemitah, okay, by failing to take care of Maisa, which means take care of the Levium who need your support, take care of the mitzvah of Shemitah so that the poor can benefit also. Once you broke that, you broke down that kind of society, so then that leads to the destruction, and that's lamented here. Later on, it says, Yado Parasar Bezul Kichm Chaliya Chuyavti Kedor Hamabul. Now, we were disturbing of destruction like the Dor Hamabul. Again, that's also a pretty heavy-duty insult before we spoke about Sodom and Gomorrah. To say we're like the Dor Hamabul, the generation of the flood, is also a pretty heavy-duty insult. But again, part of the guilt of the Dor Hamabul, part of the sin of the Dor Hamabul, was not taking care of stealing. Okay, Lo Nechtam Gzardinam Elo HaGezel, Chazal tells. The fact that they stole from one another, they didn't interact with proper, you know, respect for one another, and so on. That led to the destruction of Dor HaMabul. Here, lo and behold, we're compared to the Dor HaMabul. So again, the breakdown in the societal structure in a society that cares for others, when that's broken down, so that leads to to Churban. It is interesting, toward the end of the Kinah, on the exact words. Can't find the word now, but it says V'chava ner hadolek b'marov. Okay, this is the neros of the marocha, the neros of the mikdash. They were extinguished. But it's interesting. The menorah represents chachma, right? Ner mitzvah Torah or. And the Ner Marovi was always the one that was that lasted longest. But here it's Kava Ner Hadolek Mimarov, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed that the menorah should be put out because it was, again, a breakdown in Chochmah. The people who were supposed to be the leaders, the people who were supposed to teach wisdom and teach proper behavior, failed to do so. So that which represents their greatness, the menorah, was knocked out as well. So we'll continue with this kina. Echo Yoshua Chavetzelos HaSharon. The next kin of Yud Aleph, Vayikonin, Yirmiyahu al Yoshiyahu, is a reference to the fact that Yirmiyahu composed a hesped, a eulogy for King Yoshiyahu. Yoshiyahu was a great Jewish king, one of the greatest tzaddikim among all the kings of the line of Malchus Beis David. And Yoshiyahu led what we might call a tshuva movement of his time, and really did a tremendous job, successful in getting many people to return to proper observance of the Torah and mitzvahs. A great leader, great king, and fortunately he made a calculation error. He thought that the people had become such great tzaddikim that not only won't we ever be attacked, but as the pasuk says in Bechukos, no nation will even pass through your land on their way to attacking, on the way to attacking another nation. Just a moment. Yeah. Just realize there's a different order. There's a different order in one of the kinnas, no? Is the order different here?
I think the order
is
next.
Oh, this was, yeah, okay. So I'm talking about the one that's Vayikonin Miyol Yosha. I just realized some of the kinos have it in a different order. But okay. So those who are using the art school kinos, it's in my edition, it's page 182. Huh?
I think the next one is the last one back.
Ah, okay. So different orders. Anyway. So Yoshio made, as I said, a calculation error. He thought that the people had come to such a point of righteousness, so to speak, that they even another nation will not come through your land, even on the way to fight somebody else, even just passing through. And therefore, when the Egyptian pharaoh, known as Paro Necho, tried to come through Eretz Yisrael, he refused to let him go through because he said, we have Avtocha. Unfortunately, however, Yoshia did not realize that his movement of tshuva was not as successful as had been. Yoshio's grandfather was the wicked king Menashe, who had basically wiped out all of Torah observance. He put Avodah Zarah all over the place, even in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. According to the Psukim and according to Chazal, Menashe did tshuva at the end of his life, but the damage was done. And even in the days of Yoshio, the grandchild who had to be hidden, but originally, the time of Yoshiyahu, and the Nevi'im discussed, it's not for Tisha B'Av, but a copy of the Sefer Torah was found that people weren't even familiar with things in the Sefer Torah. We'll read this on the Yantav of Pesach. But anyway, a copy of the Torah was found and motivated Yoshiyahu to lead this whole tshuva movement. But unfortunately, there were people who secretly continued to worship Avodah Zarah. Therefore, the piety of the people was not complete, and as a result, Yoshio made a mistake in not letting Paro Necha come to enter into Eretz Yisrael. And in fact, he was killed in a battle over there, the battle at Megiddo. He died, and Yirmiyahu wrote this lamentation or this eulogy for Yoshio. Now, the truth is, and this is in the book of Echa, right, it speaks about Yoshio. But the question is, what's it really doing here? I mean, Yoshio was a great person. So Chazal tell us in the Gemara, Shkula Misosan Shal Tzadikim Kisrei Pespeis Elokeinu, right? The death of a tzaddik is like the destruction of Beis HaMikdash. We have to understand why that should be, though. Okay, on the one hand, on a simple level, death of a tzaddik is tragic, right? It's a great tragedy, just like as a person is killed, who's it's a tragedy. So the Beis HaMikdash is a tragedy. However, again, when you have leaders who are devoted to building up the society and they're taken away, so that is not just similar to the destruction of Beis HaMikdash, that leads to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara mentions that comment regarding Shkula Misasan Shal Tzadikim with regards to Gedalia ben Achikam, who was killed after the Churban. He was the Jew who was put in charge after the Churban, and just 52 days later, Gedalia was assassinated. The Gemara makes that comment, Shkula Misasan Shal Tzadikim. Well, that was the end of any kind of Jewish presence in terms of sovereignty in Eretz Yisrael. So the loss of a tzaddik, not just that it's a personal tragedy, but actually... But actually, it contributes to Churban, because you don't have effective leaders, then you don't have people who can direct the people properly. And what's interesting is that some of our enemies understood that. Okay, some of our enemies understood that, in fact, we don't have the right leaders. We'll get to that later. That's a way to conquer Klal Yisrael. You want to conquer Klal Yisrael, that's what we'll talk about when we come to the Sarah Hogan Malchus a little bit later. The way to conquer Klal Yisrael is to get rid of their effective leaders. And that's why this kina of Vayikona Yom Yol Yosho, okay, which begins Eicha Eli Karnu Me'ilov, this eulogy is certainly part, an appropriate part of the kinas. Vayikona Yom Yol. The next kina Yud Beis begins the word Ohali Asher Ta'avta Ad Lo Bereishis. Ohali means my oil, my tent. Asher ta'avta ad lo bereishis, which you are HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted even before bereishis. That's a reference to the statement of Chazal that certain things were created even before the world was created, including Torah, including Tshuva, Gan Eden, Gehenim, the Kisei HaKavod, the Mashiach, or Shmo Shel Mashiach Gemara in a couple of places. And so one of the things which existed somehow in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mind, as it were, just a matter of speaking, was this notion of a Beis HaMikdash, of having a place on earth. And therefore, it's Ohali Asher Ta'avta Ad Lo Bereishis, even before Bereishis. I just want to focus for a moment, though. Each stanza begins with the words Ohali. The Beis HaMikdash is referred to as my tent, my place. Why that description of the Beis HaMikdash as an Ohel, as opposed to as a bias or other word, building, binyan, right? All those words would have been fine. And often used. It's not often, I think, that we find the Beis HaMikdash referred to as an ohel, as a tent. Well, It's interesting that in our tradition, you know, Avraham Avinu, when he had his tent was open in four directions, so the guests can come in from every which way. I remember a long time ago driving down from Yerushalayim. We were going to Yericho and to the Dead Sea area. So those who remember have been on that road that kind of goes down past Male Adumim, and you know, it's a descent. You're descending to the lowest point on earth in terms of being below sea level, where the Yal Melech is. So you're really going through Midbar Yehuda. It's a very, very barren, white, kind of these white hills. I wouldn't quite call them mountains in most of the case, but white hills where nothing grows. But you see Bedouin tribes, Bedouin people living there, and they have tents. I remember seeing, you know, well, they have cars also, but they have tents. And you can see them. And I remember it struck me once many years ago traveling there that the tents were open on four sides. So I'm not sure it's because of Achnasas Orchim, probably just to get a little bit of air into the summertime. That's when I was there, to get a little bit of air, I suppose, into the tents. But a tent apparently is something that's relatively open. A house you can lock. You close the doors, you lock it. A building you can lock down. A tent is more open, and perhaps I was thinking that maybe that's what why the reference in this kinnah, and sometimes the reference to the Beis Hamikdash, Ohali, my tent, it's open to everybody. The Beis Hamikdash was a place where everybody could go and serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even non-Jews, right? Ki basi beis tefillah yikra l'chol ha'amim, we'll read that at Mincha in the Haftarah, but it's open to everybody. The Beis Hamikdash is supposed to be something which is accessible to everybody. It's not only the elite, it's not, quote-unquote, the forbidden city. Yes, there are places within the Beis Hamikdash where only Kohanim could go, and they had to be tar to go there, but fundamentally, the Beis Hamikdash was an area that was accessible, a place that was accessible to everybody. And while we do have, within our religious structure, different people that are assigned different tasks, you have the Malchus, that has to come from the family of David HaMelech, the Kohuna has to come from Aaron, you know, from Shevet Levi and so on. Nonetheless, when it comes to serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Mikdash, there's room for everybody to come in. And everybody's expected to come in. The Mitzvah Aliyah L'Regel and so on. Everybody's expected to be there. And that's perhaps why, at least in this kinna, the, it's referred to as an OL. It's referred to as a tent. Okay? Some suggest that the reference to the tent has to do with its destruction, because of all the things I just described, I guess an OL is the flimsiest or weakest structure. It's not as powerful as a binyan. You know, a strong, sturdy building takes more to destroy. And the Beis Hamikdash, an OL, was destroyed, very, very quickly when you light it on fire. But I prefer, at least in this suggestion of the theme we're discussing now, is this notion of the Beis Hamikdash being open to all people, okay, regardless of their intelligence, regardless of their religious commitment, and so on. There's always opportunity to find a place in the Beis Hamikdash, and that's why this particular kinna referred to as the OL. Just at the very end of the kinna, we do have a note of optimism. Refuasi betucha. Okay? Refuasi betucha. We believe that the refuah, we're confident that it's going to come. Again, most of the kinnas did not have this positive ending, but here is a kinna with some sort of positive response at the end. Refuasi betucha kirega ba'po. Ultimately, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is only angry on a temporary basis, a momentary basis, and therefore we have emuna in refuasi betucha. We have bitachon HaKadosh Baruch Hu will ultimately bring us a refuah. Ali asher to'avta lo bereishis. The next kinna yud gimel eiko omer l'koris lo befetzach, is a play on the word eicha. The word eicha is divided into two words here. A means where, and ko. Ko means such or so. And we have a number of different, very positive and beautiful haftachos that were presented in the Chumash using the word ko, or introduced by the word ko. And unfortunately, with the Churban of the Beis Hamikdash, it seems that HaKadosh Baruch Hu forgot, so to speak, about those haftachos. And so we ask, Eiko, whatever became of the promise, where is the promise that starts with the word ko? And just by way of example, looking through the kinnah, you'll see, for example, the Bris Ben Absarim is referred to, because there it says, ko yel zaracha, reference to Avram, by Yitzchak, By the time of the Akedah, it says, Vaniv Anar Nelcha Adko, we'll come back to that point in a moment. By Yaakov, it says when he made a deal with Lavan to get certain sheep, and said, Ko Yomar, and so on. By Moshe Rabbeinu, when he first stood up for the Jews who were being beaten by the Jews being beaten by Egyptians, so it says, Vaifen Ko Vacho. Matan Torah, Ko Somer Leveis Yaakov, Ko Sadabri Levei Yisrael, and so on, in terms of Matan Torah, which I skipped one, but by Yitzias Mitzrayim, Ko Amar Hashem Kachatzos Halayla, because Kohanim is introduced with Ko Sivarchus Bnei Yisrael, so we have many, many different things that are positive, that are implied by the word Ko, and we ask in this kina, a Ko. I just want to point out, though, that the previous kinnah, the one we just finished, about Ali, so Ali introduced every stanza, but it ended with the word po, right? It ended with a pasuk, or a phrase from a pasuk, that had the word po, means here. And that, presumably that's, for some sort of a scheme, rhyme scheme, and so on. Malacha po, milcha po, ma'adidi po, different explanation, different phrases that end with the word po. I think there's a bit of a contrast that perhaps the organizer of the kinnis is pointing out here, because there's a big difference between po and ko. The fact they rhyme is not relevant to this discussion. But po means here, right here, po. Ko means something which is beyond, something that's beyond what's right here and now. By the Akedah, Avraham Avinu tells his servants that are accompanying him, Atvatem shulachem po imachamor, vani vahanar nelcho adko. Avraham says, "You stay here, po. You remain where you are, and I and the young man Yitzhak will go adko to some place beyond." And I think that there's a deep lesson, and really it's not an original thought, but the idea is that there are some people who are limited, and they feel that whatever is right in front of me, that's what I can deal with now. And that's it. And that's po. I deal with the here and now. I have the phrase in English as well. I respond to the here and now. Po. I'm not looking for what's beyond. And that's not our approach. Our approach is always something beyond. There's always something that a person can achieve that's greater. A person can never say, I've reached whatever level there is to reach, and that's it. I'm not interested in going any further. In Yadus, there's always striving for more. There's always going, Nel Chad Ko. Let's go to the next level, wherever that may bring us. We don't know where it's going to bring us. We don't stagnate. We don't simply say, Po, I'm here, that's it. That was the Avraham's understood that Yishmael and Eliezer's servants, that according to Chazal, accompanied him. So they were of the ilk that we've gotten what we've gotten out of this. We don't see any further. In fact, the Medrash says that actually Avraham saw on the mountain, Vayaris Hamokom Erachok, Avraham saw on the mountain some sort of cloud and something beautiful, and he asked them what they saw. They didn't see it. They didn't even see it because they were limited to the here. Okay, so you stay here. But our approach is to go higher. And therefore, there's perhaps this contrast between these two kinos. I would add further that many people think that there's nothing I can do about it. The situation exited. There isn't. What can I do? I'm a lone person. I'm by myself. I can't do it. I've done whatever I can do. And sometimes it's true, that's how a person feels. But the Chazal tell us that's not the right approach. The right approach is go beyond the po. Okay, go to the ko, go to the next level. You can do something, you can accomplish something. Unfortunately, this kin, again, playing the word echa, says that a lot of the haftachas of ko weren't, were canceled, so to speak. But nonetheless, there were also haftachas of ko in the future. Okay, at the very end it says Ko Amar Shalachozim Notzar, right? There are certain Ko Amar Hashems which introduce the ultimate Geula. If we live our lives trying to strive for more, and when there are difficulties and situations, we don't say, I can't do anything, what can I do, I'm just by myself, but you can, accomplish something looking beyond what's in front of you, then that's something to strive for, and that leads to the positive turn of the Haftachas, let's start with the word Ko. Eko, the next kinna, Yudalad, Echa is Asher Kvar Asuhu. this kinnah goes back again to the word eichah and the word eiko. It's interesting, at the end of the very end of the kinnah, there's a reference to reading eichah as eiko, and some say this also is out of order, that this kinnah should have preceded the one we just said before about eiko. Maybe it didn't because the connection between the ko and the po that I just spoke about. But in any event, you look at the very end of this kinnah, it says, Rogla Homri Lashon Eicha Belashon Eiko, which would have been a good introduction to the kinnah we just said. So some say it's out of order. But in any event, in this kinnah, there is reference to the fact that the Nevi'im and the Avos knew that there was going to be a Golos. Avraham Avinu, there's a reference here that Avraham Avinu was shown in the Bris Ben Absarim, the different four kingdoms. Hero Arba Malchuyos, the four kingdoms that would reign over the world, over the Jewish people, was shown already to Avram, so he was already familiar with it. And Yaakov also knew the Kates. In fact, the people recall in the beginning of Parshas Vayechi, when Yaakov summons his family, his children, so it says, let me tell you what's going to be. And then Chazal said that he forgot. He temporarily couldn't remember. He wanted his Bikesh. He wanted to reveal the Kates. He wanted to reveal the time when the Golos was going to be over. But then the knowledge kind of disappeared from him. He wasn't able to do it. There are Midrashim that indicate that he asked them when the Shekhinah departed, when he was about to reveal the Kates. He gathered them around, and the Shekhinah departed from him. So he asked them, is there anything wrong here? Is any one of you don't really believe? In fact, it's where, according to the Medrash, they said, Shema Yisrael, talking to him, Yisrael meaning the father, Yisrael Yaakov. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. We all believe in Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Okay, so Yaakov was relieved, and that's when he uttered the words, Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuso Leolam Vod. That was the original Baruch Shem, was according to this Medrash, was by uttered by Yaakov, you know, at that time. The Gemara says we don't incorporate it into the Shema except silently, because but later on, in next week's Sedra, Parshas Haschanan, we find Shema, Moshe Rabbeinu did not say Baruch Shem, so we kind of have a dilemma. On the one hand, to leave it out entirely, so that's an affront to Yaakov, who said Baruch Shem after Shema. To say it, well, that's an affront to Moshe, did not include it in the Shema and the Torah, and the next week said in Wisconsin, so we have a compromise, we say it quietly. But in any event, Yaakov Avinu felt that the Shekhinah departed from him when he was going to reveal the Kate, and therefore he didn't do so, but he was suspicious that maybe the Shekhinah departed because of some flaw or something lacking in his children, and they had to correct him. So it's interesting, the Medrash says, well, he said the letters that make up the word Kate, okay, and so it's a question what the exact message is, but I think that the letters of chait, without the aleph, okay, but the letters that make up chait are not in the shvatim. You go through the names of the shvatim. I think the major says it says chait, but there is an aleph in the Reuven. So I think that it means the chait without the aleph. Okay, but at the same time, Yaakov said, yeah, that may be true. But the word Kates, which is what he wanted to reveal, the end of days, there's no Kuf and Tzadi either, so he didn't reveal it. So people try to understand what this Medrash is, that there wasn't a Chait in the outward sense, but maybe there was something inward that was still lingering with the brothers, going back to the sale of Yosef, the infighting, the mistake, Ben Adla Chavero, maybe Ben Adla Mokom, they said, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Okay, well, that's true. They believed in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they were careful about the mitzvah d'Olam Makom, but maybe because they weren't careful about the mitzvah d'Olam Chavero, as evidence from their actions with Yosef, even though this was after that, well after that, they'd already been reconciled, they'd already been come back together. Nonetheless, that stain, so to speak, was still there, and therefore I wrote that, Yaakov did not reveal the Kates to them. It's also interesting to note that Pasuk says, Vayhi Vishur Melech Bisaseh Frosh Hayom Yachad Shiftei Yisrael. That's how Rav Tachlo points out a different essay, that the time that the HaKadosh Baruch Hu will reveal himself, Vayhi Vishur Melech, want to know when it is? I can't tell you a date, we don't reveal the Kates, but it will be Yachad Shiftei Yisrael, and everybody comes together in unity again as a people. There's no sin and no infighting and so on. But anyway, that's the idea of this kind of referencing the fact that the Avos knew and others knew that there was going to be a destruction of the Golas, but we couldn't reveal, or they decided not to reveal the case. The next kina tesvav echa shposo pasuch kekever. This is the longest of all the kinos, and because they're very complicated structure. As you've noticed, many of the kinos started the word echa. It wasn't just that they started with the word echa, but actually, each stanza began with a word from the Megillah in a subsequent pasuk. Megillas echa. Prokim Aleph, Beis, Gimel, and Dalet all follow the order of the Aleph Beis. Every line, every pasuk in the Megillah is the next letter in the alphabet. It's alphabetical acrostic. With the difference being that in the third parak, there are three psukim for each letter. It's actually instead of 22 psukim as you have in parak Aleph, Beis, and Dalet, parak Gimel has 66 psukim, 3 times 22. The last parak A, also has 22 psukim, except that it doesn't follow the Aleph Beis. But in any event, many of the kinnos are written by the Python to be modeled after the Eicha itself in terms of each stanza beginning with another letter of the Aleph Beis, taking from the Megillah, from either the first parak, the second parak. Here, we have sort of a combination of all five prokim. So just looking at the first stanza, so the first line is the Aleph stanza from Perek Aleph, which is the word Eicha, Eicha, Shposo, Paso, Kekever, but it ends with the Aleph, the first of the three Aleph psukim from the third Perek, Aniya Gever. The second line of the Aleph stanza starts with the word from, that begins the Aleph line in the second Perek, and it ends with the second of the three in Perek Gimel Osi Nohag. The third begins with Eicha from the fourth Perek, and ends with the word Ach Bi Yashuv Yafoch, okay, which is the third of the Aleph stanza in the third parak. And that's how it works throughout the entire kinah. That's why it's so long, because it has this complicated scheme. The phrase at the end starts with the word that begins the each respective pasuk in the fifth parak. Again, it doesn't follow the Aleph base, so it's Zechor, okay, or the second was Nachloseinu, and so on. Those are the words that begin each pasuk in the fifth parak. And it ends with a citation from Parshas Bechukosai, which we mentioned earlier. We had Psukim from Parshas Bechukosai, that's the Tochacha, where we find first the Haftocha, what happens in the positive sense if we observe the laws of the Torah, what happens if we don't. Well, here it continues with Psukim from the Tochacha of Avesiach and Chorev and so on, different tragedies which will take place. It did take place ultimately, it was already promised in the Torah. But in any event, it's a long kinah because it has this. Sort of like each stanza is structured around each parak of the Megillah, 1 through 5, in one way or the way I just described it. I just want to point out one thing because it's relevant to something we mentioned yesterday at Shal Shudas. In the Zion stanza, it says, in the stanza letter Zion, it says, Oveis Abro im Mashiach. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was angry at Mashiach. And that's a question of who he's referring to, but some say that's referring to salvation. He thought it's referring to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was also had the status of a king, and it's a play on the pasuk that says in yesterday's lane, "Vayis Aber Hashem Bilamanchem," that Moshe was not allowed to enter into Eretz Yisrael. And the reference here is according to Salvation, is the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu, had he gone into Eretz Yisrael, the Beis Hamikdash would have never been destroyed. It's only because the Beis Hamikdash was not built by Moshe, and it was subject to destruction. That's how Soloveitchik understands it. In any event, we'll recite this kin. It's the longest of the kinnas. Echad Kosso Pasuha Kekever. The next kinna tez Zayim, Zuchor, Asher Oso Tzar Bifanim, is a reference to the Roman general Titus, who came into the Beis Hamikdash and ultimately the one who destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, but it wasn't just that he destroyed the Beis HaMikdash as an act of war, but rather as an act of arrogance and chutzpah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, that he felt that he's going to defeat the God of the Jewish people, not just defeat the Jews as a nation as part of a war, but rather he's going to declare war, so to speak, against HaKadosh Baruch Hu itself. Kadosh Baruch Hu himself, and the Chazal tell us that he stormed into the Beis HaMikdash, they weren't getting, and he took out his sword, and he tore the parochas, and the blood spilled out of the parochas. According to Chazal, it was the blood that was on the parochas from the sprinkling of the dam from a Yom Kippur and so on. That's a machlokas. They actually sprinkled the blood on the parochas, in front of the parochas, with discussion at a different time. But according to this view, it was on the parochas, and so therefore the blood kind of dripped out. And his mind, he had actually stabbed and killed HaKadosh Baruch himself, so to speak. Of course, it's not correct. And Titus ended up suffering. HaKadosh Baruch showed him that a very small bug, a very small gnat, can destroy him. It went into his head and then lodged in his brain and so on. In any event, he suffered from that. But here is an idea somehow that the enemies of the Jewish people feel that it's not just, you know, it's one thing sometimes you have a nation that conquers another nation because for military reasons. They're in the way and I want to conquer that land, so they're living there, so we'll fight with them. So it's for military reasons, it's for strategic reasons, and we need this location because we want to have soldiers here for strategy purposes and so on. That's one way in which you see a nation conquering another nation. Sometimes it's for economic gain. Sometimes if a nation fights because they want to take over, because they want to take over the economy, there's fertile land, there's good industry there, whatever else it may be. So you fight against another nation because you want to take over their industry and their economy. But here, evidently, there was also a religious conflict there. And very often with the Jews, we found that, so to speak, we consider ourselves, you know, the people of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Am Hashem. And somehow our enemies want to show always not just that they're defeating us for the other reasons, which may be part of their battle also, maybe the ikar of their battle, but in a certain sense, they want to fight against HaKadosh Baruch himself and to show, where is their God? As the Pasuk says in Parshas Hazino, Eilokeimu tzur chasoivo, what happened to their God? Even he couldn't help them against me. So he was, he was chutzpahdik, he was defiant to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's what this kinah, so to speak, pleads. The Kodesh Baruch Hu should remember what he did inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, you know, when the person is not permitted to go in, other than the Kohen Gadol and Yom Kippur. This guy came in, and according to Chazal, not only did he pierce the parochas, but he brought a prostitute in with him, and he had his way with her inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the ultimate chutzpah, the ultimate sign, so to speak, of attack against everything the Jews held to be holy. So that's in this kin. I just want to point out that in describing the korban here of the and the action of Titus, again, this is the second Beis HaMikdash, there is a phrase, Al Tzad Ma'arovi L'Zecher Hisrit Bo. The Medrash says that Titus had four generals, and each general was assigned to conquer a different wing, so to speak, of the Beis HaMikdash. And one of the generals did not fully destroy the side of the western side. He left this remnant that we call today the Kosel HaMaravi, the western wall, the Wailing Wall, was left behind. And it's because he was not successful. Now, of course, when he was confronted by Titus, what happened? Why did you destroy it? So he said, well, that's because I wanted there to be some remnants so people could see what was once here. Otherwise, why is it a great glory to you? There's nothing left. No one's going to know what was here before. So where's your glory? Who knows what was here before? Maybe it was always empty. Maybe it was always that there was nothing here. So that was the teretz that he gave. According to the version of the Medrash, she said, that's an interesting answer. So I'm going to push you off the top of it. If you survive, that means you're telling the truth. If not, well, we know what happened. But in any event, it says, Al Tzad Ma'arovi L'Zecher Hisrit Bo, Kadosh Baruch Hu dwells, that's the next line also, V'tzog Achar Kosleinu, Kadosh Baruch Hu dwells, Medrash says, Me'olam Lo Zozo Shechina Mikosel HaMaravi, the Shechina never departed the Kosel HaMaravi. Kosel HaMaravi was somehow always a flashpoint for, as it is today, you know, among the Jews and the Muslims, the Mokom Mikdash is a flashpoint of conflict. It was, somehow this place, the Jews had a little place to daven, a remnant of the Beis HaMikdash, disturbed enemies that we even had that. But in any event, that's the idea of this phrase, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu left one remnant of the Beis HaMikdash, our Kosel, and Tzog, Kosh Baruch Hu sort of is visible. He's standing behind the Kosel Me'olam Lo Zos Hashkenim Alak Me'Kosel Marovi. That's the significance of the Kosel Marovi to our existence today. It's the one Sarid, it's the one part of the Beis HaMikdash that was left, and even Titus was unable to destroy it, neither he nor his generals. Kina Tez Zayim Zuchor HaShosu B'Fin. The next Kina, Kina Yud Zayim, Im Tochal Anoshim Piriyam Olei Tipuchim, was written also by Rabbi Elazar Kalir, and it's simply a shriek, a cry, Alalai Li means woe unto me, or woe is me, summarizing, based on the Pesukim and Eichon, based on Midrashim, terrible atrocities that took place in connection with the Korban on a personal level. And this kinnah is not talking about Beis HaMikdash, this kinnah is not talking about Golos, it's talking about the suffering of individuals, people killed, children killed. That's the reference in this kinnah, kinnah Yud Zayin, a different kind of kinnah. Now, the Salvation pointed out in past years, noted in explaining this kinnah, that unfortunately many of these same atrocities were committed by the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, as well in more modern times. So, for example, there is a reference here to Sikshana Lasusim Porchim. The Medrash tells us in Eicha Rabosi that Miriam Bas Baitos, a certain young Jewish lady from Yerushalayim, was tied by the tail to the tail of a horse. And when the horse began to gallop, she bounced on the cobblestones and so on, and ultimately died. Now, Soloveitchik related, reading the quote, this atrocity was perpetrated not only 1900 years ago, but in our own time as well, during the Holocaust. In fact, it happened to a cousin of mine, who was named Yeshayahu Glickson, whose father was of a Hirsch Glickson, whose mother was the daughter of Chaim of Brisk. I knew Yeshayahu, who was slightly younger than I, very well. He was a righteous person and a fine Talmud Chacham. When the Nazis conquered Warsaw and found him and his wife, it was the first week after their wedding. The Nazis tied him to one automobile and tied his young wife to another automobile and then drove off at high speed, which of course resulted in their gruesome deaths. This is precisely the same story as related here in this kinnah. And a little bit later, the Rav noted that just as the our enemies at the time of the Chorban killed young children as well, the Nazis as well. They killed babies by swinging the baby by his legs and dashing his skull against the wall. We know that this happened at the time of the Nazis. And the Rav says, whatever atrocities are related in connection with the Chorban Beis HaMikdash happened with even more cruelty on a larger scale during the Nazi period. There seems to be not a single detail which Rabbi Elazar Kalil records from the Midrashim of our sages which did not occur in the 1940s in Lithuania, Russia, Poland, Hungary, and Romania. Quite a powerful statement. And the Rav adds about the children that the psychopathic killer understands that you have to get rid of the children because then there's no future. And once the children are killed, the future is destroyed as well. And that was employed by the Nazis as well. Children were taken away first, even before the liquidation of the ghetto. There were not many children left by the time the adults were sent off to Treblinka, Auschwitz, Buchenwald, etc. Children had already been exterminated before the Nazis went after the middle age and the elderly. And again, that's what happened at the time of the Chorban Beis HaMikdash as well. So this particular kinnah kind of complains to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we scream woe unto us, and it's sadly relevant in more recent time as well. I just call your attention to the end. The response of HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, wait a second. We alluded to this once before, earlier. It says, "Im tochal anoshim piriyam hashmim," you're complaining about what happened to you, but you're not complaining or you're not acknowledging the things you did. "Im yahari mitash Hashem koim v'novi lo mashmim." You don't acknowledge what you did wrong. And although we did have in one place already reference to the fact that what we did, we did things wrong as well. Nonetheless, in this kinnah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu complains to us that we're not yet acknowledging our role. That's a theme we'll come back to shortly. Kina Yud Zayin in Tochal Nanoshim. The next Kina, Kina Yud Ches, continues with, in effect, a complaint or a petition to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'ata Amarta Heitei Veiti V'Moch. There's a contrast between what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said and promised in the Torah and what ended up happening at the time of the Churban. Now, of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's haftachos were totally in our keeping our end of the bargain and so on, but in any event, there's a sort of each stanza here presents what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said or what HaKadosh Baruch Hu provided for us at one time and asks at each phrase, V'loma, okay, why did this have to happen? Why did this have to happen in light of whatever haftachos and so on and positive, positive promises we received? So what happened to it? Why were we deemed to go through all these difficulties? But at the very end of this kina, finally, we say, V'ato tzadik al kol habo, l'cho Hashem atztoka. We have to recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the righteous. This is the notion of what we call tziduk hadin. God forbid when a relative dies and a person is burying one of the immediate seven relatives, father, mother, sister, brother, son, daughter, or spouse. So you have to recite what's called tziduk hadin, which basically you accept the judgment of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, tragic, sorrowful, grievous as it may be. We have to accept the judgment of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is righteous despite the fact that we've raised so many questions that haven't been answered. And so, the kinnas that we've said so far and will continue to say many times have Echa and Loma and why did this happen and how did this happen and so on. And again, we mentioned this is Mutar and Tisha B'Av because the Navi Yirmiyahu himself did it. Nonetheless, we recognize at the end that Kol Zos Bo'osnu B'Chova. Here we recognize the Tzidik Hadin that we are deserving of what what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did to us. Now, this does not mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to turn it around. In fact, the Chazal tell us, the Rav stressed that even if Zuchus Avos, even if the merit of our ancestors is Tama, right, has been used up already, how much Zuchus can you use? Only so many times you can call a favor in. But there's also something called Bris Avos. The Bris Avos will never depart. There's always a covenant, there's a promise. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu does promise that ultimately things will work out. But in the meanwhile, we do accept the fact that in this kin, Tzidik Adin, Kichol Zos, Bo'asna V'chova, we are deserving of the suffering that we underwent. Continuing along this theme, the next kinah, kinah yutas l'cho Hashem atztoka, in a very similar pattern, we asked all these questions in the previous kinah of Elama, etc., 11 questions. So here we have the answers, and we acknowledge, in the sense of tzidik adin, l'cho Hashem atztoka, because Baruch Hu, you are righteous, and v'lanu boshes upon him, we're embarrassed in the list of the different things that we did wrong, so to speak. We didn't deserve the brachas and the didn't deserve the bracha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So this next kin is a continuation of the notion of tzidik hadin, of recognizing that we made mistakes, and each one, you'll read through it. It's fairly simple to understand. I just do want to point out that this kin was written by Rav Elazar HaKalir as well. And there is a stanza, just a moment. The very end, L'cho Hashem Atztoka, B'Shame'el Shana, a reference to 900 years. Okay, Shame'el Shana. Since the time of the Churban, well, actually a question of when it starts. But in any event, there are some who learn from here, try to figure out when Rabbi Elazar HaKalir lived. There are different opinions. There's some who say that he was Tana, the time of the Tanoim, which would make this phrase a little bit difficult if we assume this phrase is going, and Shama El Shon is going from the time of the Churban. That's a question where it starts from. But in any event, it's not an interesting question. It's when Rabbi Elazar HaKalir, the great Paitan, lived. But it could be the 900 years, not from the time of the Churban, the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, but the time of entering Eretz Yisrael. So not necessarily proof from here about that fact. Kina Yud Tes, L'chon HaTztoka. The next kina chaf hatayel kai oznecha is based upon a pasuk. We're actually splitting up a pasuk. We've had now the tzidik hadin. We've sort of accepted our role. So now we kind of turn to our Kodesh Baruch Hu. Again, it's composed as our kalir, based on a pasuk in Daniel, which says Hatel Kais Necho Shema, to see the Churban and to see the destruction of Yerushalayim. Here kind of splits in each stanza, Hatel Kais Necho, turn your ear, bend your ear, and listen to this. So, you know, again, it's a list of different things that we went through at the hands of our enemies, specifically a reference to, or some references to, our treatment by the Christians. Again, there's some question of whether Khalil lived and what he was writing about, but Rav Soloveitchik certainly interpreted this kinnah as a reference to the desecration of the Jewish people at the hands of our Christian enemies, which was certainly a problem to a great extent in the Middle Ages. And indeed, they said at the end of the kinnah, it says, "Hatayla kai oznecha laomrim." We have a phrase describing what they say. What they say? What do they say regarding the Churban? Regarding the Beis Hamikdash? Uzav v'shukach v'nutash v'la'ad shomim. What they say regarding the Beis Hamikdash is it's abandoned. It's the last stanza. It's abandoned. It's forgotten. It's desolate forever and forsaken. In other words, that is the picture presented certainly over the millennia by the Christians, of the Jew who refusing to accept the Christian religion is damned and doomed to be wandering around, never to have a place, never to have a homeland, never to have a temple, and so on. And that's exactly what they said. That was proof, so to speak, of what happens if you don't accept our religion. Now, historically speaking, it's for this reason that the establishment of the State of Israel in 1948 was a major theological problem for the Christians. I'm not going into detail now, but you know, the Vatican and so on, was a theological problem, besides sort of a political problem. What do you mean the Jews have a homeland? How can that be? How can the Jews have a homeland? It's against our tradition. Our tradition is, like it says here in this kinnah, that their land and their temple and their Beis Hamikdash, etc., is Uzav v'shukach v'nutash v'la'ad shomim. It's forsaken, forgotten, abandoned. It's going to be desolate forever. And suddenly, and again, that has been the position. And suddenly now the Jews have a place. That presented a problem. But in any event, we know that we're not finished yet, because as the previous stanza says, still Mechakim Mosai Yibone. So even with the return to Eretz Yisrael, we still wait for Mechakim, we still wait Mosai Yibone. And the last stanza finishes that Pasuk in Daniel, V'er Panechal Mikdoshcha Shomim. Please shine your light on the destroyed Beis HaMikdash. Hatel. The next kinnah Chaf Aleph, is the famous kinnah Arzi Halavonon, which is about the Asara Hogei Malchus, so-called 10 martyrs, the great Talmid Chachamim, 10 sages who were killed by the Romans. This appears in a number of relatively early sources, and there are again different versions of the story. We refer in our liturgy to the Asara Hogei Malchus twice, once here and once as the part of the Avodah, the end of the Avodah and the Yom Kippurim, different versions of exactly what happened. Historically, it would seem that the events did not take place, that these 10 great Talmidei Chachamim who were martyred were not martyred all at once. The story is presented in the version on Yom Kippur that somehow the Roman general or viceroy was in charge summoned these 10 rabbis because he wanted to kill them all, and sort of punishment for the story with Yosef being sold by his brothers, etc. It doesn't seem to be historically correct in a sense that some of them didn't live in the exact same generation, probably over two generations. But in any event, the fact that these great rabbonim were martyred and were killed, that is the case. We know from different Gemaras, we know about Rabbi Akiva, we know about the Chana ben Tradyon, we know from Gemaras and from Jewish sources, early sources, about the destruction of these people, who have been Bava being killed, and so on. The idea of Arzi Halavon on Adirei Torah, what it's doing here, this kinnah was, by the way, not written by the Lezer HaKalir. The question again, why is it, it's just a terribly sad story. What does it have to do with Churban? What does it do with Tisha B'Av? There's no evidence that it happened on Tisha B'Av or near Tisha B'Av. So the question is, why is it here? It's, again, we have this notion that Shkula Misa Tzadikim Kisreifas Beis Elokeinu, we mentioned earlier, that the destruction of the of tzaddikim, the death of tzaddikim is a kind of kapora, like the and it's serious to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, like the destruction of Beis HaMikdash. But I think there's more to it. We've mentioned in the past, or Soloveitchik and others elaborate upon the point that if you want to get to destroy any people, you take away their leaders. The Romans understood that. The Romans understood that the Jewish people's strength lies in their Torah and their leaders. And therefore, if we want to weaken them, conquer them, destroy them, then what we need to do is we need to go after their Torah leaders. As a side point, it's interesting, and while they did not do it with regard to the Jews, because they simply exterminated the Jews, the Nazis understood that if you want to subjugate people, they weren't interested in subjugating the Jews, they were interested in killing the Jews. It's a different story, they killed them discriminately. But I remember learning when I was in Krakow, in Poland, that when the Nazis took over the city of Krakow, the first thing they did was they got rid of the intelligentsia, the upper class, the professors and the more knowledgeable, the wiser people. Those were among the first people sent to Auschwitz. I'm not talking about Jews, I'm talking about Poles. Because they figured that way they can win over the less knowledgeable, the less intelligent, the boors, the common folks, and so on. So Romans understood that as well. Romans understood with regard to the Jews. Again, the Nazis, they didn't go after the Talmid Chacham any more than they went after anyone else, because they weren't interested in subjugating Jews, but in eliminating them altogether. But if you're interested in subjugating a people, so you go after their you go after their leaders. And the Romans understood that. So if you get rid of the Rabbi Akivas and the Chaim and Trajans and all these other great people, then you're going to have an easier time controlling or subjugating the rest of the people. And that's the idea that connects us to Churban. It connects it to the subjugation of the Jewish people. It's interesting to note that this kinna mentions only 8 of the 10, and Yom Kippur, the other 2 that are mentioned, 2 more are mentioned. Here they only mention 8 of them. Again, for whatever the reason, the story is actually, ironically, more complete in the version of Yom Kippur than the version here. In any event, this is the kina. At the very end, the kina laments the fact that all this has happened, but again, there's hope. And eventually, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will say, Shalmu Yimei Evleh. That's a pasuk in Yeshaya. It's part of the, if I'm not mistaken, it's one of the Shivat Nechemta, the 7 special haftarahs. And follow Tisha B'Av, next 7 weeks till Rosh Hashanah, Shalmu Yimei Evleich, HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises that eventually the tragedies will come to an end, and our period of mourning will end as well. Kina Chaf Aleph. The next Kina Chaf Beis, HaChrishim Enev Adabera. This is one of the kinos, the first that we've seen, that relates to a period that happened long after the Churban, the period of the Crusades, which actually, the destruction and the suffering was not centered around the date of Tisha B'Av at all. The Crusades was basically the destruction of the communities in Germany and France. The Crusaders started out on a journey in the springtime always, because that's when the weather was better. You could travel. Most of the massacres, the Crusades, happened during the months of Iyar and Sivan, Shavuos time, as we'll see in some of the kinnas later, actually mentioned. It did not occur on Tisha B'Av. Nonetheless, we do mourn this tragedy on Tisha B'Av as well, based on the understanding of Chazal. There's actually a Rashi in Divrei Hayamim, which mentions that whatever tragedies take place, we should mourn on Tisha B'Av. Whether they happened on Tisha B'Av or not, this was a day that was set aside as a day of Bechiya L'Doros, as we've discussed. It's a time of crying and weeping for all time. And therefore, we recall these events. This particular kinna, it's not clear from the kinna exactly which event it was, but ultimately, that's part of the tragedy. This very same idea can and did apply to more than one community or to more than one group during the time of the Crusades. So as we speak of this kinna, whenever it exactly took place, it's something that could have happened almost at any time. Rav Soloveitchik noted in connection with this Sekina the importance of Torah Shebaal Peh that really was developed in the time of the Crusades. Rashi, Rabbi Natam, the Balei HaTosas, Rashi, when he was born in France, couldn't learn in France because there weren't many Talmidei Chachamim there. He actually went to study in Germany. He came to Worms. He learned under some of the great Talmidei Chachamim there. What the Rav pointed out is that we have almost nothing left from these great Talmidei Chachamim of Germany under whom Rashi and the Balei HaTosas initially studied. We have nothing from these German Talmidei Chachamim. The Balei HaTosas were French. And all the Tosas that we have in the Gemara are from Talmidei Chachamim from France, not from the Germans. Why? So Rav said because the German Talmidei Chachamim were slaughtered during the Crusades, and most of their writings were lost. Not to say that the Jews of France didn't suffer during the Crusades, but it was not as bad as was in Germany. And the Rav noted the importance of the contribution of the Talmidei Chachamim of France, of Rashi and the Balei Tosas. And ironically, or perhaps strikingly, the Rav said, if Jewish history had not included the Rambam, the Jewish world would have missed a great deal. The Rambam enriched our thinking and worldview tremendously, but the Torah Shebaal Peh would have survived without him. But without Rashi and Tosas, the Torah Shebaal Peh, in a certain sense, would not have survived. The Mesorah would have been broken. We would not be able to teach Torah Shebaal Peh today. As great as the Rambam's contribution was, Rav was saying that of Rashi and Tosas was more significant. And he brought a raya from the fact that the Talmud Yerushalmi, which has no Rashi and Tosas, is very, very difficult to learn today. Very, very difficult because we don't have Mesorah. There are issues of Girsa and so on. In any event, the Rashi learned in Germany, but these great German Talmidei Chachamim, who in a certain sense are the basis on which the French Torah scholars, the French Rabbanim, based their works, nonetheless, they were all lost because of the destruction of Germany, and that's likely what this kin is referring to over here. The next kinnah, kinnah of Gimel, Vesnovi Chatosi Shmima, is the story based on the Gemara in Gittin, the story of the son and the daughter of Yishmael ben Elisha, the Kohen Gadol. The Gemara relates that they were taken away in the raid by the Romans and brought to Rome, each one not knowing where the other one was. And it turns out they were sold to neighboring Romans, and the two owners decided to pair the two slaves up to produce more children to be slaves, and each one of them lamented, without knowing who the proposed partner was, lamented, how could this possibly happen? I'm the son of the Kohen Gadol, I'm the daughter of the Kohen Gadol, and so on and so forth. And in the morning they realized who they were. They died in an embrace. That's the story that's related in the Gemara, and that's what's described in this kinnah. The question is, I mean, it's a moving story and so on, but why is it incorporated at all into the kinnahs? After all, we don't find necessarily that these individuals, the son and daughter of Yishmael, were especially important people and had important lineage, but still, the last few kinnahs, we talked about that, Saru and Gamalchus, okay, these were the leaders of the Jewish people. And then, referred just previously to the loss of the great German Talmidei Chachamim and so on. Why do we care about these two people? Not that why do we care, but why is it so important? And the answer is, as I'll let you explain, that in mourning for national tragedy, we cannot lose sight of individual suffering. And that's seen already in Megillas Echa. Pay attention, Megillas Echa, you'll see that there are descriptions of individual suffering as well. And in the language of the Rav's own words, he said, we have a special kinnah dedicated just to them, as if 100,000 people involved, not just two. Their life and their death may not have changed Jewish history, but we suffer and remember. We do not forget the faceless, nameless individuals, even in the midst of national disaster and upheaval. And therefore, even in effect, even when we tell the story of all these tragedies and we mourn for the Jews of Yerushalayim and the Jews of the great German cities, Worms, and so on, we don't lose sight of the suffering of the individual as well. And that actually ties in with a theme that I spoke about earlier of golos, meaning a disruption in normal life. It's not just the great people, the people who are able to influence others, and the people who are leading positions in society that are important. Every person has what to offer. Every person is part of society. And therefore, even when two relatively minor characters die, it's something that we make a kinna about as well. Because, again, the galus means a disruption in the norm. The geula requires an establishment of a just society, caring even about the quote-unquote little person. And so here we have an example of the way the Rav understood it, of people who were quote-unquote little people in the sense that they didn't live long enough to accomplish anything significant, really. Nonetheless, there's an entire kinna about them. So it hammers home this notion of the importance of the individual as well. Kinna number Chav Gimel. The next kinah chavdal al churban beis hamikdash gihuras uchihudash is another kinah by Rabbi Elazar Kalir, describing among other things not only the beis hamikdash but the kalim, vessels that were used were also looted and plundered. So that's what they're. You'll find many things in this kinah which are familiar to us from the beis hamikdash, klei chesef, klei zohav. Shulchanos, the Shulchan, and so on. So the various different kelim, the Kruvim I mentioned, this kinah laments the loss not only of the Beis Hamikdash, but of the kelim of the Beis Hamikdash as well, that they were taken into exile, taken by our enemies. And it's interesting, it says here in the kinah, the beginning, Espod b'chol shana mispeit chodosh ala kodosh v'ala mikdash. This is our continuous obligation every year. After all, we're saying the same thing every year for so many years. Nonetheless, this kinah tells us that's our obligation every single year, as if it's something new, because we have to hammer home, as I said at the very beginning, the introduction, the recitation of kinahs is supposed to create a certain mood. It's supposed to create a sense of loss, and we're supposed to think about the things that we lost. And that's really the ultimate purpose of all of the kinahs. And this kinah states it clearly: Espar b'chol shana mispeit chodosh ala kodesh v'al hamikdash. What's interesting is that at the very end of the kinah, again, a glimmer of hope in a strange way, actually, Kodesh Baruch Hu, so to speak, announces, Ozavti es beisi v'nachlosino tashti. I abandoned my house and deserted my heritage, my inheritance. Now, that sounds like it's not a good thing, but given that it's Lashon, referring to first person, Kodesh Baruch Hu says, Ozavti es beisi. He's acknowledging that it's his place. In other words, even though he doesn't say Azavti as Beischem, Nachlaschem Natash, he acknowledges that the Beis HaMikdash is his place. And therefore, as Chaim Brisker once said, in terms of destruction of the Beis HaMikdash and other Golios, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not only the judge, but he's a litigant, and he plays on the word that we find in the Brisker and Absarim, V'gamas HaGoy Asher Yav... Don Anochi. Don Anochi. It should say Adin if you're talking about a judge. Okay, but Reb Chaim said that it doesn't say Adin Anochi. Don Anochi is somebody who is involved in a dispute with another person. So Kadosh Baruch Hu is not just the judge who's looking at it from the outside, but I am sort of going to court, so to speak. Kadosh Baruch Hu is like a litigant. And that's the idea of Imo Anochi Bitzara. Kadosh Baruch Hu is with us in a time of Tzara, and that again is some consolation. So even as we speak in this kin about the plundering and the looting of the Beis HaMikdash and all the vessels of the Beis HaMikdash, many people remember that on Purim, in the beginning of Milas Esther, we refer to Kalim Mikalim Shonim, that Achashverosh used at his great big party. Kalim Mikalim Shonim, in the first parak, we read that phrase in the Lashon of Megillah, in the tune, in the trup. Of Megillas Eicha v'chelim and kelim shonim, so these kelim were plundered. But even in that sense, we have a nechama in this kinah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu recognizes that it's beisi and nachalosi, which means that eventually the gamas hagoy shavodu don anochi. Again, we're now up to kinah chav dalad, and we'll proceed from there. And the next kinah, Mi'itain Roshi Mayim, kinah chav hei, is a kinah on the crusade, again about the crusades, the period of the crusades. Whereas the earlier one that we read did not mention any names of places or dates, this one is very specific, and it mentions what happened in the particular communities on the particular dates. So it says, for example, Vakone Mar Ale Herugi Ashpira. Okay, that's the city of Spires. Basheni Bishmonabo. Right, the second month, eighth of the month. I mentioned before the Crusades were during Iyar and Sivan. That's why, by the way, just as a side point, you know, on Shabbos morning we say Abarachamim, right before we put the right before we say the second Ashrei, before we put the Torah away. After Yom Kippur, we say Abarachamim, Kilos Hakodesh, and so on, memorializing communities that were destroyed. That the Abarachamim was composed, it would appear, in connection with the persecution of the Crusades. Now on Shabbos Mivarchim, it's a special Shabbos, or for some other reasons, Yontif and so on, we don't say Abarachamim, we omit the Abarachamim. We don't say, let's say, even on Shabbos Mivarchim once a month. However, Shabbos Mivarchim Chodesh Iyar, we do say Abarachamim. Shabbos Mivarchim Chodesh Sivan, we do say Abarachamim. In fact, even, according to most poskim, even, like there was the case this year, when Erev Shavuos was Shabbos, Shavuos this year, we recall, was Saturday night, Sunday, Monday. So even when Erev Shavuos is on Shabbos, we still do say Abarachamim. It's not the usual pattern to omit it on a day when there's some sort of simcha associated with it. Nevertheless, because Abarachamim is composed in connection with the destruction of Jewish communities at the time of the Crusades, and that's when it happened, the month of Iyar and Sivan, as identified here. Okay, it mentions Kahal Vermeiza, Be'asim V'Shalosh B'Chodesh Ziv, and U'Chodesh HaShlishi B'Kriyas Halel. Okay, but Kahal Magensa with the third month of Zehala, it's on Shavuos, and so on. So we have a new number of different references here. Now, it's interesting because the kin itself mentions, B'chi ein lahosif moed shever v'saveira. Okay, we're saying these kinnas now because not, as opposed to when the events actually happen, we're not allowed to add sad days of Belvel of Salvation. You learn from here, that's why it's not proper to say additional Tfilos and so on any other days of the year. Everything should be pushed over to Tisha B'Av. That's part of the quote-unquote controversy that's regarding Yom HaShoah for the Holocaust and other dates. Some understand that it's got to be the Tisha B'Av is a national day of mourning. So we'll continue with this Kina again regarding the Crusades. Mi Yitain Rosh Yimayim Kina Chof Hei. Mi Yitain Rosh Yimayim. The next Kina. Is based on a medrash that says that when the Beis HaMikdash was going to be destroyed, so Yirmiyahu went to the Maris HaMachpelah to get the Avos and ultimately Moshe and others to petition to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the sparing of the Beis HaMikdash and the Geula of their descendants and so on. After all, Moshe interceded on behalf of the Jewish people a number of times, and again with the Zechus Avos at play, perhaps that would work over here too. So this kin is called Oz Baloch Yirmiyahu Kiryat Avos, that Yirmiyahu went to the Kiryat Avos. However, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not accept the pleas of Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, or of the that of Moshe Rabbeinu, saying that what the people did, they rejected everything and so on. I can't do it. I can't spare them for these reasons. However, and the Medrash answers famously that Rachel finally wept and cried. It was HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Rachel, you don't have to cry, and v'shavu vonim ligvulam, eventually they will return. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did accept the petition of Mama Rachel, right, Rachel Imenu. According to this particular kina, it wasn't just Rachel, but it was also Leah and Bilah and Zilpah. And to that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, okay, then I'll listen. So it's time an interesting distinction between the way the medrash that we have presents it and here, the way the kinnah presents it. But in any event, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu says in the end is Shulachti Bavela Lemanchem. I myself, so to speak, was sent into Bavel. That's the psukim at the beginning of Sefer Yechezkel. It says Vani B'socha Gola, right? That's referring to Yechezkel himself, but indirectly HaKadosh Baruch Hu also is in Golas together with Bnei Yisrael. Again, we have the notion of Imo Anochi Bitzara. So whereas HaKadosh Baruch Hu first very kind of staunchly defends himself and defends what he's doing, nonetheless, eventually gives in, according to the Midrash, the weeping of Rachel, according to this kinah, it's not just Rachel, but the Imos, and Yirmiyahu's petition eventually results in HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying, V'shavu Meretz Oyev and V'shavu Vonim Ligvulam. Kinach Chav Vav. The next Kinach Chav Zayin, Ozmelo Sefek Yofa Kesirtza, may actually also be slightly out of order because at the very end of the Kinach, there's an idea of Yirmiyahu running to the Maris HaMachpelah. Right, so Yirmiyahu says, let me go to the Maris HaMachpelah. That might have been originally before and so on. But in any event, this kinah begins, Ozmo Sefek Yofa Kasir, so it describes Yirmiyahu seeing some sort of a person. He sees a woman who somehow has a very, very strange and frightening appearance. She's, at the one hand, beautiful, but is very elderly, and she has sort of like an aristocratic bearing, but looks very poor and disheveled to the point that he's not sure if this is a real person or some kind of a vision or some kind of a demon or something. And she explains that she is a representative, so to speak, of Klal Yisrael. And the various numbers are mentioned as Kina, describing how she once was. I am... relation one, that was Avram, who was one person who believed in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and 12 representing the Shvatim, and now saying she's suffering, she's Klal Yisrael suffering, in this state of being dirty and disheveled, and basically she says go to the Maris HaMachpelah to pray. What's interesting is that Soloveitchik pointed out that sometimes a person can be very attractive. But because of circumstances, looks disheveled, looks poor. And he relates to a Gemara, a Mishnah action, a Darim, that a woman was being fixed up with a certain young man and he didn't find her attractive at all. He found her somewhat repulsive to look at, and therefore he took a neder that he wouldn't go out with her, wouldn't marry her. And then, in preparation for, her shiduchim, so to speak, she got dressed up and she was cleaned and dressed properly and her whole appearance changed. And the person now suddenly realized that they didn't read the situation correctly. Basically, based on the rules of Ataras and Darim, he realized this wasn't the same person that he took the neder about. Okay, the details of the story are interesting, but the Mishnah records, Rabbi Shmuel at that time says, that's the problem. The problem is all the young ladies and all the young men, everybody's attractive, everybody's beautiful, but poverty and suffering makes us appear unattractive. And that's what happened here. This woman who represents Klal Yisrael was perceived by Yirmiyahu to be dirty, contaminated and so on, and until he realized what she represented. On a different occasion, the Rav said that there were Jews who unfortunately had to violate Shabbos. And it was more the case in his time than in our time. But Jews realized if they didn't go to work on Shabbos, they wouldn't have a job on Monday. And it was very, very challenging. Some people passed the Nisayon, they didn't go to work. But other people, regretfully and sorrowfully, and no choice but to support their family, they went to work on Shabbos so as not to lose their job. But it was only temporary, because as soon as they could survive without it, they gave it up. They were basically from Jews. And that's what I've said, sometimes circumstances make us appear to be dirty and disheveled and contaminated, but once we're cleaned up, it's a different story, and that's what happened here. And again, as I said, this kinah ends with a petition to the Avos, perhaps it would have belonged before the kinah we read previously. So now we read kinah chav zayin oz, gemlo sefer. The next kinah chav ches, eich tanachamuni hevel, is also... Rabbeinu Zakalir, it's actually the last of the Rabbeinu Zakalir kinos, and basically sums up the suffering of Klal Yisrael in various generations, and each stanza ends with the phrase, V'eichen Achem, how could I possibly be comforted, how could I possibly be consoled? And it just describes different periods of suffering in the relatively early history of the Jewish people. What's interesting is, though, that some of the events seem to be out of order. That's what Soloveitchik pointed out, that if we're referring to different persecutions and sufferings and so on, why does it not follow the exact chronological order? And the Rav said that's because it's an expression of avelus, And avelus means when a person is so distraught that he can't even think clearly. There's a certain sense of confusion. When a person's in avelus, you're not even sure of the calendar date. You don't know what day it is, because you're not paying attention to that, and everything blends into one. I've had the experience many times, and myself included, when I sat Shiva, I spoke to someone who sat Shiva, they don't even know what day it is. They don't know what the day of the week it is anymore, don't they? They don't know, because the avelus is so intense. As a matter of fact, somebody asked last night, when the walls of Yerushalayim were breached, so we have a tradition that the walls of Yerushalayim were breached on Shivos HaBetamuz. That's why we have the fast on that day, and yet the Psukim indicate that it was the ninth of the month, and it wasn't Shivos HaBetamuz, okay? And some suggest, based on Yerushalmi, that Kilchol Cheshbonos Yeshkan, there was a mistake in the chronology. They were breached on the 17th, but the people were so confused, they thought it was the 7th, which is hard to imagine. You can tell by the moon, whether you're in the early part of the month, unless it was cloudy, or unless they, even that they couldn't tell. Suffering takes over, and as I said at the very beginning, sometimes everything, when a person is in despair, when a person is suffering, when a person is depressed, so nothing fits in, nothing makes sense. The Rav suggests, perhaps that's why, in this kinna, to express avelus, certain of the events that are alluded to, the punishments that we sustain at the hands of different enemies are out of order in this particular kinnah, again, which ends Ve'echan Achaim each stanza, but concludes with a positive note, Ve'ozen Achaim, eventually we will be consoled. Eichan Achaim, we have a kinnah chofchas. The next kinnah chofchas, Amarti Shu'u Meni B'chilam Arer, is another kinnah, I think the third on the, relating to the Crusades. It's a long kinnah, and it's described in very bitter terms, the slaughter of Jews at the hands of the Crusaders, including the children, and so on. I mentioned before, they went after children as well, as we saw in the Holocaust too. And it's a long kinnah that speaks about individual suffering, individual tragedies. Again, the Crusades was a very brutal treatment of individuals, and we don't want to lose sight of individual suffering, even in the communal suffering. And it's a kina that that also ends. Look at the very last paragraph. Very last paragraph says, "Nilesi niso as kolat law." I'm just tired from having to bear all this travail. And we hope, as the phrase ends, Ushnas ge'ulai ba'a. I mentioned in the past, we say, Lashana haba'a b'Yerushalayim. So, it means next year in Yerushalayim. So some raise the question, why don't we say, Lashana hazos b'Yerushalayim? What's the matter with this year? What if they say next year in Yerushalayim? So, b'Pashas, it means this time next year. By this time next year, it should be in Yerushalayim. But actually, the word ba'a, depending on whether you pronounce it ba'a or ba'a, with the accent on the base, the accent on the aleph, one, it can mean the coming year, but also can mean the year that has come. In other words, the present year. Rachel ba'a imatzon. Again, it makes a difference in how you pronounce the word when you're laning, but it means that it happened already, or it is that which is happening right now. Some understand that it's shnas gulai ba'a, even though it's there it says... the accent is on the base. Shnas gulai ba'a, we understand it to mean the year of my redemption has arrived. So perhaps Lashana haba'a b'Yerushalayim is not the next year in Yerushalayim, but the year that has arrived already. And this is a long kinna relating to the time of the Crusades. Kinna chavtas amarti shumeni. The next kinna lamed. Mahone shemayim. We mentioned earlier that the Beis Hamikdash referred to as an ohel. We have one of the kinnas towards the beginning. It spoke about Oli Asher Tohavta. Here it's referred to as a bias. We have many psukim that reflect on the end of each stanza relating to the word bias. The Beis Hamikdash is called a bias. But what's interesting about this kinna, aside from that, is that the destruction of the physical bias, which is referred to here, is symbolic of the destruction, so to speak, of not HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, that's not possible, rather of the bris, or of the a relationship between Klal Yisrael and the Jewish people. And it begins by noting that all the heavens and the celestial area can't sustain HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Aloha Lord's Kvodo. So how can this bias, how can some physical structure contain HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? So but HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought that in for to which have a place to serve him. Nonetheless, however, we're marbe chatoim, there's so many different sins that took over. HaKadosh Baruch Hu had no choice but to destroy the Beis HaMikdash and, in a sense, terminate the relationship. The relationship was not about the bias itself, but the bias symbolized this connection. And when we canceled that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, had to destroy this bias. Again, it ends on a positive note, as we've seen already the last number of kinos. It says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should return, v'nei kvar Hashem, ba'al ha-bias. We'll see the fulfillment of the glory of HaKadosh Baruch Hu coming back to the bias. Kino Lamed. Up to Kino Lamed Aleph, I mentioned in the beginning that there is a parallel between the recitation of the Haggadah on Leil Pesach and the recitation of Kinos on Tisha B'Av, that both readings are designed to create an attitude, to create a sense, a feeling, and so on. But it goes a little bit deeper than that, in the sense that actually there are parallels between the Yetzias Mitzrayim and Yetzias Yerushalayim, which is the theme of this particular kina. Each stanza ends respectively with Betzesi Mitzrayim and Betzesi Yerushalayim, one being so positive and bright, one being so negative and so dark. Betzesi Mitzrayim, so the Jewish people experienced it, and it was the highlight of the beginning of our nationhood, so to speak. And we came out of Mitzrayim, so everything is very bright and glorious. However, when we left Yerushalayim, everything is sort of dark and depressing. It's a low point. And so Tisha B'Av and Pesach are, so to speak, a high point and a low point. Our calendar is worked out such that Tisha B'Av and Pesach are always the same day of the week. The first night of Pesach, the first Seder, is always the night of Tisha B'Av. This past year, Pesach was Friday night Shabbos. Tisha B'Av was Friday night Shabbos. We don't observe Tisha B'Av on Shabbos. It was pushed off to today. But in terms of the calendar date, it's one of these facts of our calendar that Tisha B'Av and Leil Tisha B'Av and Leil Seder are connected. They're also connected, according to some, I mentioned in the past, according to some, the presence on the Seder plate of a beitza, which an egg is usually a food associated with Avelis, Rachman Otsan, and someone comes back from Shiva and has the Sudas Avra, so it's a meaning to have an egg. Some suggest, there are more, suggest to have a beitza at the Seder plate because it reminds us of the Churban. Why would we want to think about the Churban on Leil Pesach? Well, in a certain sense, perhaps, and the Vilna Gaon, by the way, rejects that explanation for that reason. He said the beitza is not, there's no Avelis on Pesach, but he's... What the Ramah may be driving at is that we do feel on Leil Pesach acutely the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, because in fact, one of the principal pieces of the Leil Seder, the Korban Pesach, the meat of the Korban Pesach is not there. Okay, so therefore we don't have, the, and we make mention of what they used to do. Right, Zeichel HaMikdash Kehillel, we have the Korek sandwich. Zeichel HaMikdash Kehillel, right, we recall what used to be done in the days of the Beis HaMikdash. There are other things which were done to recall the Beis HaMikdash. Some suggest that the minig that many people have, that either the head of the household or all the men wear a kittel at the Seder, one of the suggestions is because when you ate kachem, when you ate meat from karbonos, you dressed in special clothing, so this is the kittel sort of reminiscent of that. Other things, the fact that we even wash before karpas, some that it seems suggest, is because we want to replicate what was done in Beis HaMikdash. We today don't wash until Zidayim as a general rule when we're dipping vegetables or fruit into liquid. We don't follow that practice. We certainly don't do it with a bracha. Most people don't do it at all, prompting the Taz to wonder why we do it the Leil Seder. But he says, Manishtala halayla zeh. Another question. Right? Why do we wash our hands tonight? We don't do it all year long. And then the Tziv answers in his Haggadah because it's to recall the Mikdash. So there is this connection between Pesach, of course, and the Mikdash in a profound way. And this kina kind of highlights the contrast between what happened Betzesim Yitzrayim, Betzesim Yerushalayim, meaning, as I see it anyway, that even Pesach is incomplete in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash. As long as there is a Tzesim Yerushalayim, so the Tzesim Yitzrayim is incomplete, and that's perhaps why it's been our practice, as I alluded to earlier, to end the Seder with saying, L'shana Habu Abi Yerushalayim, and this connection of the Leil Tisha B'Av being the same night as Pesach and so on. So we highlight this interesting. This Kinnet, I think, is the author is unknown, but we highlight this contrast over here. Kinnet Lamed Aleph. Eshtukat bekir bivahalosi ali bibitse me mitroyim kinemoiro lamanaski robitse me rushalayim oz yoshir moshe shirlo yinoshe bitse me mitroyim ikone yirmiyav nachon dehini abitse me rushalayim Beisi is gone on the shahan on Bitsay say me mitroyim Hamas or shahan I can on Bitsay say me rushalayim Galayam Ram of Hahama Akam Bitsay say me mitroyim Dunim Jotav of Arashitav of Bitsay say me rushalayim The Gan Shamaya Mitsuyozo Bomai Mitsay say me mitroyim Anom Rohrim Umayim Amorim Mitsay say me Rushalayim Ashkem Hare Saviva Zakore Mitsay say me mitroyim Kore Aleva Amaros Bob Mitsay say me Rushalayim O Mari, quote Adonai, Kesho Chalas of Honai, Tay Sim in Mitzrayim, Becherem Latosha, Latama, Matosha, Tay Sim in Rushalayim, Zabach, Min Chavisham, and Amishka, Tay Sim in Mitzrayim, Suas El Lakucha, Kitsan, the Tibcha, Tay Sim in Rushalayim. Chagim v'shavosos, umosim v'yosos, v'tzeisei mimitroyim, tainis v'eivel, urdof ha'evel, v'tzeisei mirushalayim, tovu aholim l'arbohadigolim, v'tzeisei mimitroyim, v'hole yishmeilim, v'machros areilim, v'tzeisei mirushalayim. Yovel Shmita Veretz Oketo V'tzeisei Mimitzrayim Mokor Latzviso Zichoro Zichosos V'tzeisei Mirushalayim Kaporez Aron V'avnei Zikoro V'tzeisei Mimitzrayim V'avnei Hakaloch Lei Hamala V'tzeisei Mirushalayim Levim Aharonim V'shivim Zekenim B'tzei seim im Mitzrayim Noksim umonim umochrim v'konim B'tzei seim Yerushalayim Moshe Yireinu v'harin yalcheinu B'tzei seim im Mitzrayim Nebuchadnezzar v'andreinus Kesar B'tzei seim Yerushalayim Naroch milchama v'arai shama B'tzei seim im Mitzrayim Rachak mimenu, hine enenu, b'tzeisi mirushalayim. Sisrei paroches, v'sidrei mareches, b'tzeisi mimitroyim. Chema niteches, v'alai socheches, b'tzeisi mirushalayim. Olo zvochim, v'shei nichochim, b'tzeisi mimitroyim. B'cherev medukorim, b'nei tzion ha'yukorim, b'tzeisi Pare mikbos lechavod mikbos, b'tzeisei mimitroyim. Shrikos usruos, kolos uzvahos, b'tzeisei mirushalayim. Tzitz hazav, b'ham shavah, b'tzeisei mimitroyim. Ushlach hanezer, ofas hezer, b'tzeisei mirushalayim. Kedusha nevua, b'chvor arnoi nira, B'tzeisei mimitroyim, Yigal al morah, b'ruach ha'tumah, B'tzeisei mirushalayim. Rina v'yishua, b'chatzot roz ha'turua, B'tzeisei mimitroyim, Zakas oho, v'nakas oho, B'tzeisei mirushalayim. Shulchan ha'menorah, b'chal el-tor, B'tzeisei mimitroyim. El Hill, the Soeva of Fessel, the Matseva, Betsay, Simu Yerushalayim. Torah usudo chlei achem do mitzei seim e mitzrayim. Sosayim v'simuch v'das v'shalayim v'shovim v'shalayim. Kinnalamid Bey's Etzbos I Shall Follow has a recurring crying out of Oya and Oya Mehayalana at the end of each stanza. It's a scream, it's a cry. You know, there are two reasons why people will cry out when in pain. Sometimes a person cries out because you hope that somebody will hear the cry and will come for assistance. So you'll scream help, or you'll scream out, and hopefully somebody will hear and will come for your come to your rescue. Other times, however, a person cries and screams knowing that absolutely nobody's there and nobody can hear, because it's simply a natural reaction. When a person's in pain, he cries out, and he says, ouch, and he says it loud, even though there's nobody listening and nobody can help him, and so on. And really, perhaps those are the two aspects that are hinted at in this kino, oy and oya and oy mehe'olanu. On the one hand, we simply cry because of our suffering. And again, a summary: destruction of the Beis Hamikdash and the various items of the Beis Hamikdash that are mentioned. Again, we had an earlier kina, the kelim of the Mikdash and the different things that are mentioned. So, on the one hand, there's oya, there's just great crying out of the sense of suffering and pain, even though nobody hears. On the other hand, oy mehe'olanu is what we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the beginning of the last parak of Megillas Eicha, Zechor Hashem Mehayolano. It's a petition as well. So both themes are perhaps alluded to in this kinna, kinna lamed beis. Etzbos HaShoflo V'Shos HaNoflo Oya. The next kinna, kinna lamed gimel, is very similar to the one we just said. I'll hear the refrain, instead of Oya and Oya Mehayolano, is Oya Li and Alai Li, again, woe to me. Whereas the previous kinna referred to the Churban and the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash and the different kelim of the Beis Hamikdash, this one is talking about, once again, the period of the Crusades. It actually mentions in the Zion stanza at the year Zman Shnas Tatnu Tov Tov Nun Vov B'Yud Aleph or Yol Machzor Reish Nun Vov Oyoli. That was the year 4856, 4856 from creation. Okay, and the cycle of the leap year cycle, the 11th year of the 256th cycle, etc. So this is the time of the Crusades. That's when it gives the information. That's the secular calendar. It's 1096, which is when the Crusades began. Again, we've already had kinnis about the Crusades, but this one has that same theme of Oy Ali crying out, two possible crying outs, crying out for help, but also crying out because of ongoing or unrestricted suffering, where a person simply calls out in great pain. So we'll say this kina lamed gimel. Evel ha'oranino. The next kina lamed dalad is the kina concerning the story, the tragic story of the Babylonian general Nebuzradon, Yomach Bichparti, kina lamed dalad, which has as its refrain a pasuk in the second paragraph, Echa vayer v'vas Yehuda taniyah v'aniyah, he increased within the Jewish people mourning and wailing, and so on. And the story is known, right? There was a Navi, Zechariah ben Yehoyada, who was a Kohen Gadol, and he was executed by Jews. He was stoned to death by the Jews. They were all, actually, seven different Averas, the Medrash says, because he was an innocent person. He was a Kohen, he was a Navi, he was a judge. It happened in the Beis Hamikdash, and it was on Yom Kippur, and it was also Shabbos, all kinds of different things. And the blood of Zechariah was spilled on the ground and began to bubble, and the bubbling did not stop. Rav Soloveitchik sort of created an analog to the blood of Cain, the first murder in history, where his blood somehow cried out. It says, "Kol Dmei Achicha Tzalkim Alechem in Adama." Kadosh Baruch Hu's Torah relates that Kadosh Baruch Hu said to Hevel, I'm sorry, said to Cain after he killed Hevel, your brother's blood is calling out from the ground. And in effect, as long as Hevel's blood was not at peace, so Kadosh Baruch Hu couldn't forgive Cain. So Zechariah's blood continued to bubble for years until Nebuzaradan, the Babylonian chief general entered the Beis HaMikdash, saw it, and wanted to know what it was about, and the Jewish people were too embarrassed to admit that they'd killed their own navi. So they made a story, well, it was for the animals, and the sacrifice, and the korbanos, and so on. But after, upon finding out what really happened, he wanted to, so to speak, silence the dam and get it to stop bubbling, and so he started slaughtering animals, but pouring the blood over it, but the blood didn't stop bubbling. Then he began to kill people, and he executed literally thousands of people, young people, kohanim, members of the aristocracy, members of the Sanhedrin. Finally, after killing many, many people, he screamed out, as is mentioned in the kin over here, how many more people do I have to kill? Hachola ataosa l'sheris hashivya, you want to annihilate the remainder of the Jews? What's going on? And the blood finally stopped bubbling. That's the story that's mentioned as kinnah. It's interesting postscript that eventually, this kinnah, I should mention, was composed by the great Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi, the Paitan of Yehuda HaLevi. And anyway, it ends up, historically, the Gemara says that Nebuzradan eventually did tshuva. After this event, he did tshuva. The Gemara in Gittin. And he realized his behavior, and he left his position of leadership in Babel, and he converted to Judaism. Rav Soloveitchik suggested that the reason this appears in the Kinnas at all, that's a tragic story, but it appears over here towards the end as we prepare for the last series of Kinnos, to indicate that no matter how bad a person has been, no matter what a person has done, tshuva is always within the realm of possibility. And that, I think, dovetails with the fact that we have already expressed over a number of the kinnos that we are to blame for the tzaras, and you know we should do tshuva, and therefore this kinnah highlights the fact that tshuva will ultimately can work for just about everyone, no matter what a person has done. And the truth of the matter is, some of the principal psukim that the Rambam quotes in Hilchos Tshuva are found from the third parak of Megillas Eicha. The Rambam begins in the fifth parak of Hilchos Tshuva, mentions Nachnu Foshanu Marino Vatalo Solachto, and so on, and the more famous pasuk Nachpasod Rachenu Vanachor Vanashuva Ad Hashem. That's a pasuk that's about Tshuva that again appears in the third parak of Megillas Eicha, and therefore, in a certain sense, Tisha B'Av, the Rav stressed this, is not only a day of Avelus, but it's also a day of Tshuva. I mentioned at the very outset that it has a dual nature to it. It's a Tainus, but it's also a day of Avelus. Most of the time during the Kinnis, we're focusing on the Avelus, but really with the arrival just a few moments actually, of Chatzos, so the nature of Tisha B'Av changes. It shifts from the day of Avelus. Strictly speaking, after Chatzos, which is just in about 10 or 12 minutes or so, a person, strictly speaking, can sit on a chair again. If you want to stay on the floor and say kinnis, it's okay. If you want to sit down in a chair, if you're uncomfortable, it's also okay. Why? The fast isn't over. Tisha B'Av is not ended. Okay, but nonetheless, the Avelus is somewhat tempered. The Avelus is a little bit, it's a little bit limited, a little bit more leniency, so to speak, after Chatzos. And there the theme of Tainus takes over. When we daven Mincha on Tisha B'Av, it's really the Mincha of a Tainus Tzibur. Shachris was not the Shachris of a Tainus Tzibur. The laning at Shachris was not the laning, nor was Haftorah, or in the regular Tainus Tzibur, we don't say Haftorah in the morning anyway, but it was Haftorah relating to Avelus. On Tisha B'Av at Mincha time, the Tainus aspect takes over, and the aspect of Tainus is Tshuva. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Tainus that a person who fasts but doesn't do tshuva, this is missing the boat. That a person who says that all these things that were happened on this day were coincidence and happenstance, and it's just, that's the way it goes, that's a midas achzorius, the Rambam says. And therefore, this kinnah, perhaps, focusing on Nebuzradan, and yes, it's a terribly moving kinnah, there's certainly avelus, but it also hints, based on what ended up happening in Nebuzradan, that a person can do tshuva, and that's the notion of, that it's possible. And that's why the kinnah concludes the last paragraph of the kinnah, which some editions have in brackets and parentheses, is our statement of Lecha Chatanu Elokim. Okay, we have sinned, we want to do tshuva, and we ask our Kodesh Baruch Hu to accept that despite all the bad things that have happened. So we'll continue now with this kinnah Lamed Dalet, Yom Ach Bichbarati Vaichbu. The next kinnah Lamed Hey, Shkuras Velo Miyayin. Is the last of the kinnos prior to the set of Tzion kinnos. This kina shkuras milo miyayin is a very depressing, actually, ending to the kinos, because it describes Knesset Yisrael as drunk, but not because of wine. Shkuras milo miyayin, drunk not with wine, but unfortunately with suffering, with misery. And it really speaks in very bitter terms about the destruction of our people, and it kind of summarizes some of the things we've discussed: destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, destruction of the Kelim of the Beis Hamikdash, and the destruction of children, but of lives in general. And we say Sielav Kapayach. So I think in this one kina, a number of the major themes that we discussed already are kind of summarized. We mourn the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, the loss of the Kelim of the Beis Hamikdash, not losing sight of individuals, the lives that were lost, but ultimately turning to pray, to sort of lift up our hands to our HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and hope that our HaKadosh Baruch Hu will allow us to avenge our enemies and ultimately answer our tefillos. So that's where, in some certain sense, this is perhaps a fitting end to this unit of the kinos that describes some of the major themes already covered in the earlier kino. So, kino lamed hey, shechuras v'lo miyayin. We come now to kino lamed vav, which is the beginning of the last series of kinos, with one exception, all beginning with the word tzion. This one was composed by Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, tzion alos ishali, lishlom asirayach, which describes, among other things, the beauty of Tzion, the beauty of Eretz Yisrael. Rav Soloveitchik pointed out that if you look in the beginning of Megillas Eicha, it says, "Zochar Yerushalayim Yimei Omya Umrudeha." Certainly, Yerushalayim remembers its suffering and the bad parts, but also but also the beauty. And part of mourning is also to remember the way things once were. It's interesting that we have two different, and this is in Halacha, two different practices as to how we remember and recall Yerushalayim. In Halacha, I'm talking about. Sometimes, for example, we have the practice to take the lulav all 7 days, all week long of Sukkot, even though the Torah requires us to wave the lulav only the first day, other than in Makom HaMikdash. We take the lulav all 7 days, which was instituted after the Churban by Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was the chief rabbi in the post-Churban period. So he said we should take the lulav as a Zecher LaMikdash. So that's one type of Zecher LaMikdash. We do things to replicate what was done in the days of the Beis HaMikdash. So just like in the days of the Beis HaMikdash, they took the lulav all 7 days in the Mikdash, we take the lulav all 7 days, only the rice of the first day. The rest of the week is Drabbanan as a Zecher LaMikdash. However, sometimes there are things that we do to remember the Zecher LaMikdash that we refrain from doing. So the Gemara says, for example, at the end of the third parak of Bava Basra, that when you paint the house, you leave a little corner, a little area unpainted. Or when we have a chasana, Baruch Hashem, a day of great simcha for a chasana kala, we do something which has an avelus aspect to it. We put ashes on the head of the chasana, we break a glass. So these are things which also are Zecher LaMikdash. What's the difference? So the Rav kind of distinguished between Zecher LaMikdash and Zecher LaChurban. Sometimes we do things to replicate what was done in the Beis HaMikdash. Sometimes we do things in a way to the exact opposite. We don't do. We leave something missing. And there are really two different psukim that he cited, because the Gemara cites two different psukim. The Gemara cites the Zecher LaMikdash by Lulav, the pasuk of Tzion hi Doresh Ein Lo, Michlal Debar Yidrisha. It says no one is looking after Tzion, so we have to do so. No one cares about it. We have to do so. Michlal Debar Yidrisha. But in the Gemara Rav Abbasu, it speaks about abstaining from certain things, including meat and wine and so on. There they quote the more famous pasuk of Yishkachech Yerushalayim. The Rav posited, there are many rayas which are in the halachic realm, which is not for today, that demonstrate that ultimately there are two different aspects. And so there's one aspect of remembering Yerushalayim by highlighting what we don't have anymore, and that's been the majority of the kinnas, but these last kinnas describe what was, what once was. That's a different way of remembering. Just want to point out that the word Tzion itself is a strange word. It's used in Tanakh in different contexts. Sometimes referred to with Eretz Yisrael in general, sometimes specifically Yerushalayim, sometimes the Beis HaMikdash, sometimes the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So it's interesting, just the very word Tzion can have a number of different meanings. And the point is, here the reference is really both to the, it's really Mikdash, it's Eretz Yisrael, it's Yerushalayim. But this particular kinah, Tzion Alosesh, Alosishal, Shama Sirai, speaks about something about Eretz Yisrael, or the beauty of Eretz Yisrael being unique from a natural point of view. And that was the very first haftocha of Eretz Yisrael being Eretz Zavas Chalav Udvash. And Moshe was told about at the time of the burning bush, Eretz Zavas Chalav Udvash, that there's a unique quality in the nature of the land of Eretz Yisrael itself, and that is highlighted a little bit in this and subsequent kinos. There's a reference to Avir Artzeich. We have a concept of Avira de Arim Machim, right? The very land of Eretz Yisrael brings a person, very air rather, of Eretz Yisrael brings a person wisdom. So that's what these subsequent kinos talk about. We'll begin with Lamed Vav. Tzion Ali Sashal Lishama Sirai. The next kino, Lamed Zayin. Also with Tzion, again, continuing along the same theme. Not written by Rudolf Levi, there's some suggests written by Ibn Ezra. Also praises Eretz Yisrael, praises the dirt, the soil of Eretz Yisrael, even the animals of Eretz Yisrael, and the waters of Eretz Yisrael. The waters of the Yarden River were able to cure Naaman from his leprosy where no other great rivers could. The animals of Eretz Yisrael, the Chamor, Pinchas ben Yoyer, who did not eat food that it hadn't had Meiser taken from it. Even the animals are controlled. The Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, Lo hizik nachash ve'akrav b'Yerushalayim me'olam. No snakes or scorpions ever bit people in Yerushalayim. Again, speaking about the differences in Eretz Yisrael. And it's just interesting, I've pointed this out in the past. Have you ever been to Eretz Yisrael and watched or looked in the newspapers about the weather forecast? You'll see about, I don't know, eight different areas, eight different zones. You know, Eretz Yisrael is smaller than New Jersey. If you listen to the Jersey weather forecast, it's more or less the same throughout the whole state. It's not that big. You know, and yet in Eretz Yisrael, there are a lot of different climates. It depends where you are, a lot of different temperate zones. And it's just interesting somehow about the nature of the land that's unique in that way as well. Kino Lamed Zayin, Tzion, Kechi Kol Tzor, Gilu Tzirah. Next, Kino Lamed Ches, Tzion, Ateres Tzvi. Again, the same theme. Again, a different author describing the beauty of Eretz Yisrael, the place of David and Shlomo, who are mentioned in this Kino, Yiram Lucha. It mentions Ir HaTmarim, which is Yericho, and it mentions that when the Ktoris was offered on the Mizbeach, so it wasn't necessary, the smell was so powerful that people didn't have to put on perfume all the way to Ir HaTmarim, all the way to Yericho. It's quite a distance from Yerushalayim to Yericho, several miles. Whether there could be, it's an exaggeration, but it's trying to tell you that there is a sense of the power of the Ktoris. Smell of Eretz Yisrael, also something beautiful. Some say it's a reference Ir HaTmarim to Yericho. Wasn't until Ir HaTmarim, but specifically in Ir HaTmarim, in Yericho, somehow the Torah was felt because that was the first city conquered. There's also reference here to the Eser Kedushos, the 10 levels of Kedusha, the Mishnah Kalim, about Eretz Yisrael having 10 levels of Kedusha, starting from the Eretz itself, going all the way through the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Again, the unique quality, the unique properties of Eretz Yisrael, naturally as well as in the realm of halacha. Kino Lamed Ches, Tzion Ateres Tzvi, Kino Lamed Tes, Tzion Tekonani Alei Vesech Asher Nisraf. Here again, it's a different python, a different author, calling the city itself, since we've been speaking about the unique qualities of Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim. So here the python says that the city of Yerushalayim, or if it refers to all of Eretz Yisrael, should itself come out and then reference at the end to going again to the Maras HaMachpelah to call upon the Schus Avos and the Imahos, as we read about earlier. Kino Lamites, Tzion Tekone Alevez. The next Kino Mem, Tzion Yedidus Yedid, Tzoyir L'Sarayach, refers to the Beis HaMikdosh, again, specifically the fact that the Beis HaMikdash is in the territory of Binyamin. Binyamin was the only one of the brothers of Yosef who had nothing to do with selling him. Obviously, Binyamin was young. Reuven actually wasn't there, but didn't do what he was supposed to do. Yosef himself has some blame for creating the situation. So that's why the Beis Hamikdash was built in the territory of Binyamin, who was called Yedid. The Parshas Zos Habracha, Yedid Hashem, Yishkan Lebet HaKalav, that's Binyamin. I do want to mention, just very briefly, because the hour is late, that we find in this Kina, Tzin Yedidus, we actually find, aside from the discussion about Binyamin, a mention of a place called Ein Etam, which the Gemara records was a place they thought they were going to build the Beis HaMikdash because it was the highest of the mountains in the area. They thought it makes sense to build the Beis HaMikdash on the highest mountain. However, they darshan the pasuk regarding Binyamin, Uvein Ksefov Shochein, that the Beis HaMikdash should be built on the shoulder, not on the head, Uvein Ksefov, so that's not the highest, but the second highest. And many raised the question, what do you mean, how could there have been a debate where to build the Beis HaMikdash? We already know from the time they entered into Eretz Yisrael that Yerushalayim was going to be the political capital of Eretz Yisrael. Yerushalayim lo nischalka l'shvatim, that's why Yerushalayim was not divided up actually among the Shvatim. It was like an independent area, like we have Washington D.C. that doesn't belong to any one particular state. And the same thing about Yerushalayim. So what was the doubt? And the answer is that it was not necessarily the case that the Beis HaMikdash had to be built in the exact same place in terms of the religious center and the political center. The answer is it is that way, but it didn't have to be. It would not be strange to say that the religious center is in one place and the political and governmental center is another place. The two don't automatically go together. However, in light of what I said thematically already a couple of times, the two do go together, actually, and that's the maskana. Because the Beis HaMikdash is not just a sense of worship, a place to worship HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but Yerushalayim is the capital, Ir HaTzedek, like we mentioned in the Haftar yesterday of Chazon, right, that it was a place that was a place of Tzedek, that unfortunately the righteousness diminished, but eventually it will be called again, Yikor Loch Ir Tzedek. It's not separate. The Beis HaMikdash has to be the place where there is justice, where there is chesed, where there is a just society. And that's really what, again, in light of the theme that we've already discussed a few times over last night and today, that's why Ein Etam was not the place selected, the fact that it was higher, not only because of Drusha in terms of Binyamin and Ein Ksefav Shochein, but ultimately the place of the Beis HaMikdash is to be in the place which is the center of Tzedek and justice and a just society, because those are not separate items. So that's Kino Mem. We come now to Kina Mem Aleph. That's Shali Sufa Be'esh, the famous Kina composed by the Maram Rutenberg, one of the great authorities in terms of halacha among the Balei HaTosas, the last of the Balei HaTosas, really. And it's written on the occasion of a great tragedy in Jewish history. It did not happen on Tisha B'Av, but it was already discussed. Tisha B'Av was a day to mourn many tragedies here. This was in the year 1242 in Paris, France, under the French king, who was at that time Louis IX, known as Saint Louis. He was a fanatical Christian, and there was an apostate Jew at that time named Nicholas Donin, who debated one of the Balei HaTosas in the Chil of Paris. As a result of all of that, that disputation, there was a terrible event where 24 wagon loads of Jewish Sfarim were taken, burnt in the public square, and including the manuscript of the Gemara, very few survived. I think the only one that survived completely is the so-called Munich manuscript, which had examples of differences between our standard edition of the Gemara and the old editions of the Gemara and so on. Everything else was burned. The Maram Rutenberg feared that the Torah Shabbat Peh would be completely lost, and as Rav Soloveitchik said, is one of the great miracles of Jewish history, that Torah Shabbat Peh survived. And this kin is written in a very sort of an angry or bitter or frightening style. It's questionable why it's placed here in the middle of all the Tzion kinos. The Rav suggested it's because the style is the same. But in any event, this is a kina on one of the great tragedies of Jewish people, but it resulted one of the great miracles of Torah Shabbat Peh was, in fact, not forgotten, was preserved by people like the Maram Rutenberg. The story of the Maram Rutenberg personally is also a tremendous story. He himself suffered terrible persecution, thrown into jail, he died in jail, and so on, but was still able to pass on Torah to his Talmidim, who always quote him, like Os Maimonides always quote him, the Mordechai quotes in the Torah, and that's really the continuation of Torah Shabbat Peh, certainly in terms of the tradition of Bnei Ashkenaz. And he's the author of this Kina Mem Aleph. Shali Suva Ba'ish, Schau mal, wie reich ist das? Schau mal, wie reich ist das? The next kid in Membei, Tzion Tzefiras Pe'er, picking up on this theme of the uniqueness of Eretz Yisrael in terms of nature, here there is an idea that somehow the land itself should consult or petition the parallel in heaven, the Yerushalayim Shel Mala, Yerushalayim Shel Mata, to petition HaKadosh Baruch Hu to intervene on behalf of Klal Yisrael to bring us out of the exile. The Yerushalayim has a counterpart above. There are makoros for that, which we'll have to go through another time. But that's what the pitch here is. Zaki barama b'kolech. Bring your cries on high to the Yerushalayim Shel Mala, and that should bring about the end of the Golos. There are references to the angel Michal and Gabriel, who are being called upon to assist us to end the Golos. Membe, Tzion, Sefiras. Mekinem Em Gimel, Tzion, Mishpat, talks about perversion of Mishpat. Again, the theme we've discussed throughout the day. Unfortunately, the decline in running a just and proper nation was something that led to the Khorban. The Gemara discusses that the judges at the time of the Beis HaMikdash were afraid of the rich and powerful and therefore did not judge properly, and that was the complaint that Yeshaya Navi had many times, and that's what's covered in this piyut. Unfortunately, that people were misguided and did not set up a just society, and that led to the Golos and the destruction. Tzion b'mishpat lech. The last of these kinos, Mem Dalad Tzion Geveres l'mamlachos mitzirayach, basically sort of laments the fall of Yerushalayim from prominence, but at the same time ends with the Esmach v'osis b'yom eshma v'aseh b'kol. Yerushalayim will once again, and goes back to the original statement that we would have been leaving the first Tzion, it ends Shalom Menucha Drosh or Shalom Asirayach, that the city of Yerushalayim will eventually seek the peace and recall all of its captives. And that ends this section of the kinos, after which we'll recite two kinos for the Holocaust and then Eli Tzion. Tzion Givareth on the Holocaust Mitzvah. The greatest tragedy to befall the Jewish people in modern times is, of course, the Holocaust. And the Art School edition prints two kinos, which it's our practice to say, at page 384 and 386. One composed by Rav Shimon, by the Baba Rebbe of Shlomo Haberstam, Zechon Levracha, and one by Rav Shimon Schwab from the Breuer's community of Das Yeshurun. And so we'll say those two kinos now before concluding with Eli Tzion. Again, page 384 and then 386 in the Art Schools, the kinos for the Holocaust, the victims of the Holocaust. Zichron over Konro. Finish with Eli Tzion, page 390. Eli Tzion ve'yareho, k'mo isha v'tzireho, v'chiv sulach agur asak, ahal ba'al me'yureho, alei armon asher nutah, Dash my soul, my daughter, Yah be as my heart, so my dash my daughter, Elite Zion, the Yore, come on, you shall be here, so the Hagura sack, I'll mommy, I'll go lose my shore, say. And he may shear the morrow, the Aldomon, the Cheshupa, Pome may arreo, Elitzion, the Yoreo, Kmoisha, the Tireo, the Chimsula, the Gurazak, Abba, the Reho, Ale Hagion, the Choleo, Chedamon, the Yoreo, Yahvad Asher Shomei Uvitus Hanedreya Elitzion V'yareho Kvavisha V'tzireho V'chiv Sulach Hagurasan Alba Amireho Alei Zivchei Semideho Ufidyonei V'choreho Yalchilu Kilei Echol Umizbah, Ketoreha, Eli Zion, Yarel, Moisha, Chivsula, Chadurasa, Abal, Yurel, Alei Tavei, Melachel, Rei David, Yivirel, Yayof, Yom, Hasher, Hosha, Rei Soro, Zareho, Eli Zion, Yarel, Moisha, Vitzireho, Chivsula, Chadurasa, Abal, Yurel, Alei Chavod Asher Galah Reis Churban Yireh Yalochei Asher Lochah Tzisam Tzisakim Chagureh Eli Tzion V'yareh Moisha V'tzireh Chiv Sulach Chagurasa Kabal Yireh Alei Machat Rav Makos Sher Hoku Zireho, the Anifos, Kutalaisalo, Laleha, Elitzion, Yara, Moisha, Zireho, Chivzula, Chagurasa, Gamal, Ale Simcha, Zoyveo, Sohaku, Ashuroho, Alino, Ibnei Chorin, Zireho, Tareho, Elitzion, Yareho, Moisha, Zireho, Chivzula, Chagurasa, Kalbam, Ale Pesha, Shemitzu, Zulderech, Ashuroho, Yautzivos, Kehaleho, Shizuveho, Shoreho, Elitzion, Yareho, Moisha, Zireho, Chivzula, Chagurasa, Kalbam, Ale Kolo, Beis Rabu, Kodoreho, Darik Shas, Minad Veho, Sof Mishkan, Chatzireho, Eli Tzion, Yoreho, Moisha, Vitzireho, Chiv Sula, Chagurasa, Kalbam, Ale Shimcha, Asher Chulal, Befi Kamei, Mitzireho, Vial Tachan, Itzav Chulal, Kishal Vushma Moreho, Litzion V'yoreho, Moisha V'tzireho, Yechiv Sula, Hagurasa, Oba Nureho, Shomron Kol Mutin.